Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Well, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then they trash him and say he's a fucking pill-popping, you know, pothead or whatever when he left.
Fuck you, daddy.
I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard. You
can keep her. I need a bitch to hold my stash, a bitch to give me some ass. And when I'm on the run, I need a hoe to send me some cash. I'm a ball till I fall, and that's the first right. I need a bitch to watch my house while I live in street life. And I know it sounds crazy. I want a gangster bitch to have my baby. And pack a 380. And ride home by the popos with dope and a Mercedes. And know to be a lady.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live from deep inside the PCB man cave. And of course, joining me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. And welcome, everyone, to episode 162 of the Place to Be podcast. And we continue our concept album. This is like the podcast version of Tommy. Or Quadrophenia. And
is Samuel the Giant involved in that?
Yeah. And the Acid Queen, too. The reason I say this is, and for those that are new to the show, welcome. You should probably start doing that because, you know, we love getting new listeners all the time. And if you're new to the show, this is because this is the one on Stitcher. We'll be coming up on Stitcher. You know, first of all, welcome. It is always a pleasure to have new listeners to the show. What we've been doing, and when you get an opportunity, head to the page, Place to Be.
Yeah, you know, let's run everything down because we haven't done that lately. And I feel like, you know, I was looking back through our email box and the emails have tapered off. But if you want to contact us, you know, either through Facebook at the Place to Be podcast fan page or the live chats page, which you can join by requesting if you search for actually, I think it's a hidden group. So I don't know if you'd have to I guess I'd have to invite you. So just message me. It's a Place to Be live chats group on Facebook.
Yep.
And then our email is placetobepodcast@gmail.com. You can contact us there. We'll get back to you. Follow us on Twitter, place2bpodcast as well. So, and bigelow34.proboards.com is our message board home where you can contribute your feedback and all other kinds of conversation and discussion. So, yes. we haven't done that in a while, so I figured we'd reset. And then, oh, placetobe.podbean.com is the home of our archive as well.
Yes. And the reason I'm bringing up the archive, JR, is because what JR and I have been doing since, obviously, if you're new to the show, we're obviously wrestling fans, duh. But ever since we started doing our vaults, the vintage vaults, which of course we do at least one a week, and of course just posted last night, a couple days ago, is our SummerSlam 97 with our good friend Graham Coffin. Great show, had a lot of fun. JR and I have always said, as wrestling fans, that one of the most, there have been some very important years, calendar years, in the history of the business. JR, you and I have talked about it. 1989,
1984, 1992. I think 1984 is a forgotten one because there's no pay-per-views per se, but that's really when the WWF broke out and started the Rock and Wrestling thing, and Hulk Hogan exploded, and, you know, NWA, and, you know, a lot of change was going on there. AWA was still kind of going strong, so World Class was really big at that point. So, the 84 is kind of a forgotten year, and there's a lot of good feuds in the WWF at that time. Maybe we'll have to do a vintage trip back with Graham one day to a 1984.
Oh, I would love to go back to 1984. Yeah. That'd be great.
Kind of a forgotten year.
It is a forgotten year. You're right. 1984, 1989 is a tremendous year in wrestling. 1992.
Yep.
But really, if you had to pick the one year that polarized this business and pushed it off into a completely different direction, it would easily be 1997. And obviously, we're in the midst of 1997 in our vintage vaults. As I mentioned, we just did SummerSlam. But we decided, as you and I were kind of setting up this little run of shows, that we really need to delve into other stuff going on in 1997.
Yes.
You and I are Vince Kool-Aid drinkers, true and true. And I don't apologize for that. However, we are, you know, we were big WCW fans. We enjoyed watching it. And of course, in 1997, ECW started to, mm-hmm. well, not started to, but maybe not hit its, you worded it right the other night in the SummerSlam. ECW didn't hit its
well, it was
financial peak, but it hit, you worded it really well. I can't remember it.
It wasn't even the show. It was after we were talking to Graham, they didn't reach their business, you know, peak. I think that would come a year or two later, 98, 99. When they, you know, had multiple pay-per-views a year, and they had earned a television deal on TNN, and, you know, there was a lot going on. But creatively, I think 96, 97 was really their peak, and talent-wise, as far as names go. So, I think 97 was a big year for them. It was the year they debuted on pay-per-view. So there was a lot going on in ECW. WCW, I think, was at their peak creatively and business-wise. May 98 would be a little bit more successful business monetary-wise, but I think 97 is where they were, you know, creatively and the product was at its best, and their roster was at its best. And WWF, you know, we've chronicled this, we've gone through the year, so. And, you know, there are a lot of other indies still kind of, you know, hanging on. And the business, the internet was blowing up, and, you know, online websites and AOL sites and everything else was starting to really catch on, and you know, starting to get a little bit more mainstream, and things would really, you know, continue to grow. But as they grew, it really became the WWF that would get big, you know, not the whole business as far as mainstream level. So I think 97 was the peak of the major promotions. So
exactly. So JR and I have decided, as the Who did with Tommy and Quadrophenia, we decided to do what we would call just a podcast series. And maybe when we finish up, we'll give everyone like the list of numbers to listen to in order if you want to.
Yeah, because we have some cool stuff planned after this. We won't get into yet, but there are some different things we have coming up as well that we think are pretty cool to have to do with 1997.
Yeah. So, and then what we'll do is we'll make the 1997 collection, kind of like the cool box set, and we'll let you know what order we think you should listen, because they may numerically not be in order, but chronologically they'll be in order.
Right.
Now tonight. Mm-hmm. We are delving out of WWE. We're not our comfort zone, but off the Vince path. We are going to go to the next night after the show that we did with our man Graham Cawthon a couple nights ago. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to New Haven or wherever that Raw the night after was. I don't know where they were the Raw the night after.
No, it was New Haven. New Haven was the one.
Yeah, I don't know where they were the night after SummerSlam. Somewhere in the Northeast.
You're going to make me look it up. You know, you pose these things randomly in these shows, and I got to go digging for it.
We got to prove that the history of WWE.com definitely works. Graham said that he was behind last night. Well, he didn't say that on the clock, but actually he kind of did. But yeah, the history of WWE.com, tremendous site. Our man Graham Cawthon. Anyway, while JR is looking that up, the night after SummerSlam, of course, there were two shows going on Monday nights.
August 4th was from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, the Stabler Arena.
Oh, that's
and it was the first episode to air back at 8:57 instead of 7:57. So that experiment lasted not even a year, because the first one, of course, we reviewed earlier this year, along with Kevin Kelly. We talked about the October 4th, 96? No,
November.
November 4th, 96.
November 4th, 96, yeah.
The Brian Pillman, Steve Austin gunfight, of course. And that was the first episode of Raw that aired at 7:57. So not even, you know, about 10 months later, we're back at 8:57 now, the night after SummerSlam for Raw. So,
which is probably pretty smart, considering what would be coming up. It's probably smart to start late.
Yes. But anyway, as Scott mentioned, we are not headed to Bethlehem for Raw. We are headed to Detroit, Michigan, because it is time. Auburn Hills, Michigan.
Yes, the Palace, home of the Pistons.
Because it is time to review the 100th episode of WCW Monday Nitro. So this was a big deal. It was a three-hour episode. It was, of course, the 100th episode celebration. We're not going to review it live, so we have the review in front of us. We've both watched it, and we're just going to kind of run through the review like we did earlier this year with the April 21st, 97 Raw. So, Scott, we kick off hour one with Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Larry Zbyszko. Of course, we've talked about my enjoyment of this team. I don't know. I may be one of the few Larry Z fans on commentary, but I thought he added a little, seriousness. You know, we always talk about Jesse Ventura and JBL and these other guys. I think Larry was out of that mold. Not as good as those guys, but he added a lot of legitimacy and importance.
I agree. I don't have a problem with Larry. I was never a big Mike Tenay fan. I mean, I'm rolling on it here, and I'm in Studio B tonight in the other room because I don't have a VCR in the main room, so I'm watching it now and just on mute. And Mike Tenay just always had this goofy deer in headlights smile every time he was on camera.
Yeah.
I'm like, God, that guy's a toolbox. But Larry.
Very Rotella-esque.
Yes, exactly. Larry was very old school and grizzled, and I think he was good for I think he was good for the broadcast team. Very different to Bobby, who we would hear in the. How did they split? We'll document as we go along tonight. I'm trying to wonder where they split now that they have 3 hours, but we'll get to that.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I enjoyed Larry, and you know, Tony. He was pasty and plain.
Glad that his his legacy is that he's pasty and plain. So
he's pasty and plain.
All right, we head inside Auburn Hills for the 100th episode. The techno beat of the Nitro Girls dancing quickly turns into the strains of Voodoo Child. Actually, the NWO theme this time around. As Hollywood Hogan plays the air guitar, struts down to the ring along with Eric Bischoff. And Larry Z says this is going to be a bad day for the New World Order, and we'll reveal why shortly. But
It was actually not the air guitar, it was the belt guitar.
Okay, right, the belt guitar. I still consider it the air guitar, if it's not a guitar, though.
Right, but he's playing with the belt. Okay. Of course, Hogan is still the WCW champion, had not lost it since beating
a year
the
earlier.
Giant.
Yes.
Yeah, the Giant at Hog Wild the year before.
So. Hog Wild 96, so now we are a year removed from that show because this is the go-home show to Road Wild, renamed, of course, because of Harley Davidson pitched a fit with the Hog name and everything else, so they changed it to Road Wild, and this is the final show before that pay-per-view. So we're leading into that. So anyway, Hogan and Bischoff hit the ring, and Mike Tenay said there's a scuttlebutt in the locker room that the Steiner brothers have a bombshell for the NWO here tonight. And we're also reminded J.J. Dillon's in the house because he has an offer for Sting, and there's rumors that Sting may be here too. So you could tell they're already stacking the deck for this show, which yes. I liked. You know, they're not giving things away, but they're hinting at major things to come to try and hook you in. So Eric says Lex Luger's as dumb as a brick. Hogan says that when you mess with him, you mess with the whole NWO. You better be ready to pay your dues for the rest of your life. He said everyone was ready to watch Road Wild to see Luger be a lamb led to slaughter. But WCW finagled some paperwork, went behind Bischoff's back, and instead made a world title match for tonight instead of Road Wild. And Lex Luger will be getting that title match tonight. The Road Wild match was still on, but we're going to get a match here as well. So a lot of angst among the internet fans at the time. You know, was this a smart idea? Why did they do it? We'll get to that discussion later because I think it's an interesting one. You know, if this was a smart or a stupid idea that they did this. But anyway, so Hogan basically shit talks Luger a little bit more. And says the title will stay in the family. And then we go ahead and move on. And actually, Hogan says that once Luger loses, Scott Hall is going to take Luger's match at Sturgis. So I don't know where he pulls that out of. But I found it interesting.
That's very strange.
Maybe he's just tweaking Luger or what. So Hogan poses. We hit the announce table. Tony says that Hogan's attorneys tried to cancel the match, but they couldn't get the job done. And Tenay reminds us that Luger had racked and beat Hogan in a non-title match a couple weeks ago. And I believe Luger had also forced Hogan to submit at Bash of the Beach, if I'm correct, in the tag match with Dennis Rodman, right?
Yes.
I believe he beat Hogan with that. So,
yep.
All right. So then we head down to our opening bout, Kurt Hennig versus Mortis. Mortis is, of course, portrayed by Chris Klunitis. I can never say his last name.
Klutsaris, I think it is. Obviously, we're talking about Canyon, of course.
Yes, Chris Canyon.
Chris Canyon. And I'm actually watching that match right now in mute while we were talking. And it's pretty basic. Nothing crazy. Let me ask you something. Do you think Kurt went on the juice?
Oh, yeah. He was big. I think he was compensating for the injury. That he was coming back from. And yes, Luger Luger forced Hogan to submit to the torture rack at Bash of the Beach. So he had beaten him twice already via the torture rack. But yeah, I think Hennig was definitely juicing. I think he was trying to make sure his back, you know, stayed up and that he was in good ring shape because he hadn't really competed in a while, you know, since late 91 he hadn't, since late 93 he hadn't been in the ring. So,
right.
Now, you know, 3.5 years. It's a long 3.5 years is a long time. But,
it's a long time.
So, yeah, I think he was definitely juicing here. And he had just joined WCW a little bit earlier in the year. He came down and was Diamond Dallas Page mystery partner at the aforementioned Bash at the Beach. So he's still kind of lingering around. And by this point, he had started to join the Horsemen finally. He was going back and forth, had a lot of consternation if he was going to join. They kept begging him to join. And finally, he did. So Kurt Hennig here, part of the Four Horsemen, along with Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Chris Benoit. And he takes on Mortis, like we said, portrayed by Chris Canyon, who had been pretty much a jobber before this role. He was part of the Men at Work, Steve Mongo McMichael's favorite tag team, along with Mark Starr. And then in 1997, he donned a mask, was brought in as Mortis, and was brought out by James Vandenberg to the Eternal Feud with Glacier. And we talked about Glacier the last night you reviewed back from July of 96. So you know, pretty basic match. It only goes about 3:44. Hennig gets the win with the Hennig Plex. I think just a match to showcase Hennig and get the show started. Kind of weird, though, for WCW to have a named guy like that in the opener. Usually they built to those guys a little bit. But
Do you think that it seems like these guys were getting jobbed a little bit too much? Mortis and Wrath? And,
nah, I don't. They were in a weird spot. They had, like, their own contained feud going on. And in that feud, they looked strong. And then pretty much whenever they ventured out, they struggled a little bit. Although we'll see Wrath a little later, and his match goes a little bit differently than this one. But, Kanyon was never really given any kind of serious push as Mortis. So, I mean, he's booked. His character was meant to be strong, but he never actually comes across strong in the ring, if that makes any sense. But so, anyway. So pretty basic match. I don't know, there's not much to talk about. I mean, the announcers really, you know, talk about Sting. They talk about Luger and Hogan and typical WCW stuff. A lot of the undercard is usually spent talking about other matches other than the one that's going on. And, you know, I can't totally blame them. I mean, it makes sense a lot of times to do that because, you know, keep people tuned in, and that's what TV is for, so...
Right, exactly. So,
all right, yep.
So nice win for Perfect. I should say Hennig. We can't really call him Perfect. We have to change the copyright thing now. Then we have. I'll just as I'm watching it right now. It's actually a cute little vignette, Jared. Little montage, shall we? Tell them what the montage was.
It was a retrospective of the last year, the past year of Sting. Shouldn't say last, but past year of Sting's life. And it was set to his old theme song, The Man Called Sting. After that, we head back to the ring for the next match. But Sting, of course, just to take a moment and kind of explain where he was at, he had still been hanging out up in the rafters. This started in the fall of 1996, and since that time, he hasn't had a match at all. He's come down a little bit and beat up on some NWO guys, but for the most part, he's just been chilling up in the rafters with his black trench coat on, and every now and then he'd show up to clean house. But, you know, we're getting closer to his return, but still not really confirmed what side he's on, what he's going to do when he comes back. The NWO keeps trying to bait him, and J.J. Dillon's begging for him to come get involved, but still no movement from Sting, so we'll see if that changes here tonight. Okay. Right. Next up is a tag match, Jeff Jarrett and Dean Malenko versus Hector Guerrero and Chavo Guerrero Jr. Jarrett's in a weird spot here because he was aligned with the Horsemen, and then they kind of booted him out because he was having issues with Mongo, who I forgot to mention before was also part of the Horsemen. Of course, Arn Anderson, you know, let's rewind quickly and talk about the Horsemen. Arn Anderson, I mentioned him as part of the Horsemen. He was, but he's basically de facto manager because he had already suffered that injury that would end his career. So the fourth guy to take his spot, of course, the infamous spot, you know, NWO parody, was Kurt Hennig. It was Mongo, Benoit, and Flair were the other three active Horsemen. So
yes, for those that don't know the injury, it was, I believe it was his right shoulder, and it kind of affected the nerve endings in his shoulder. And that's why you always see him, his hand is kind of, his fingers are kind of bent now on his right hand. And he really can't, his right hand is, it's almost like arthritis. His right hand is in essence useless.
Mm-hmm.
And, Arn, sadly, could not wrestle anymore. And I was very sad. That promo really got to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone knows, Ric Flair is one of my favorite wrestlers, but Arn was always my favorite Horseman. So it was very sad, but Arn had no apologies. Great career,
mm-hmm.
And as JR mentioned, he handed his spot to Hennig, who took it. So
Jarrett was the odd man out because through his feud with Mongo and everything else, they ended up just kind of booting him out of the Horsemen. Had this alliance with Malenko and Deborah McMichael, of course, Mongo's ex-wife. So his ex-wife, Deborah, who sided with Jarrett during their little issue, so she ended up leaving Mongo, going with Jarrett. So Jarrett here in Malenko versus the Guerreros, and they announced that Jarrett and Dean would take on Benoit and Mongo at Road Wild. So another match that's solid. You know, it's okay. Just under 5 minutes. A lot of these Nitro matches are the same. You know, they're pretty basic. They usually don't go more than, you know, 5 to 8 minutes, and they're all solid. You know, nothing's ever too bad, and We talked about this last time we did Nitro. I always liked the WCW tag format. It was very unique. They didn't follow any kind of real structure or format like the WWF always did.
Right.
There was always a lot of back and forth, a lot of momentum shifts. They didn't do a lot of the heat segments and whatnot. So I always kind of dug their tag matches.
I did too. And incidentally, just to add to that, JR, Jarrett is the United States champion too.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
At this point. So at this point as well.
I need to correct. Was Hennig, had he accepted yet?
I believe, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think it happened till the end of August. Maybe even early, Yeah, because didn't it happen right before Fall Brawl?
Because Fall Brawl is where
that's where he turns. That's where Hennig joins the NWO. So I think it was like the first weekend in September, the first Monday in September. Then the following Monday was that terribly tasteless NWO parody which we'll get into another time. But yeah, I don't think it actually technically happened yet. I think at this moment Hennig is still kind of himself. I don't think
September 1st. You're correct. September 1st is when Hennig accepts the role. Actually, wait. Nope, that was the next week. Hang on 1 sec. September 1st. Graham's page for Nitro is not the best. It's sometime at the end of August. I'm sorry, we don't have the exact date. But it, September 1st looks like that was the actual NWO parody. So.
Yeah, and that was just... Well, obviously, Bash at the Beach would be later in the month because September 7th would be...
No, War Games, you mean.
I mean, I'm sorry, War Games. Fall Brawl.
Yep.
Would be later in the month, obviously, because WWF was in that weird stretch where their pay-per-views were early in the month. So Fall Brawl wouldn't happen, I think, till the 21st, I think. I think it's the 21st. And that's, of course, when Hennig turns and joins the end of
So I misspoke a little bit earlier. He wasn't part of the Horsemen yet, but it was pretty much... I mean, they kept talking about it and hinting at it. So it was coming. You know, it was still a storyline going on. So... That said, Malenko and Jarrett win, U.S. champion, and they are ready to take on Chris Benoit and Mongo at Road Wild. So Jarrett struts and celebrates as we go to break. We
Come
head
on,
back.
Benoit.
Yeah, baby.
Come
me
on,
and you. Four horsemen. All right, so we come back. Mean Gene's at ringside looking to speak with Raven, who's sitting in the crowd. Of course, Raven came from ECW, portrayed by Scott Levy, who was, of course, the great Johnny Polo in the WWF. And he had been spending the last couple months since he debuted in late June just sitting in the crowd. And another ECW stalwart, our good friend Stevie Richard, shows up as well. And he just starts hanging out with Raven in the crowd. But he kind of acts a little bit goofier. So Stevie sneaks up behind Gene with a piece of paper. He says, last week he came out with a WCW contract for Raven, but they ran into a snag. And he spent the last 14 days at the CNN Center trying to work on a contract for Raven. He said he renegotiated and made sure Raven will now follow the trail as Stevie has blazed. And Stevie's gimmick here is just to be kind of a goofy guy. He was kind of a putz and Raven's little lackey that he gets smacked around all the time. So he gives Raven the contract and a pen. Raven looks at it, looks up, spits in Stevie's face, and then shoves him to the ground, throws the contract to the floor, and walks off. And Stevie basically says, Raven, you're not going to abuse me anymore. So it looks like Stevie kind of reached his breaking point. What did you think of this way to introduce Raven? Did you think it was smart to let him brood in the crowd for a while, or do you think they should have kind of struck while the iron was hot and got him right into the ring?
I can understand them going this approach because this is kind of the way he was in ECW, but you have to remember the crowds are very different. ECW crowds and WWF crowds are very similar, but the Northeast crowds and these WCW crowds are a little different. Now, obviously, they're in Michigan, they're not in the South, but the premise is the same. I think the WCW crowd, I think they wanted something hotter, so I can't say I was totally in favor of it. I think he should have just come in and started just going crazy instead of this whole stewing, brooding nonsense. Because I'll tell you know, a lot of these WCW guys, fans probably never even watched ECW and have no idea who the hell the guy is. They're like, wow, Johnny Polo grew his hair out, you know? you know, God, what happened to the Polo stick and the Quebecers? I'm sure that's what you were asking. But, I think it would have been better off if he had gone out there and started going after people and all that kind of stuff. Maybe the vignettes would be fine because they would do vignettes where he would kind of, you know, tell the little poems and quote the Raven nevermore. But then I think he should have just started up and went crazy because they're making Raven seem more important than he probably was in the
I don't know, though. I don't know. I kind of liked it. I thought it was different. It kind of made him stand out. So I kind of dug it.
All right. Well, I mean, I would have been better if he just came out and had his little crew with him and kind of, you know.
It made him seem like a big deal that they kept trying to sign him and he was just sitting in the crowd. So, I mean, anytime you can kind of inflate the importance of a guy, you know, I think it's a big deal. So, all right. So next up, we have a handicap match. The Giant, prepping for Road Wild as well, takes on Lenny Lane, Scott D'Amore, and Joey Maggs. So we have a longtime WWF jobber in Joey Maggs, a future TNA star in Scott D'Amore, and of course Lenny Lane, who would later become a little bit of a name in WCW. So,
actually, I'm looking at them right now. Lenny Lane actually he looks like Lenny Lane has, he looks like a combination of Chris Jericho and Shane Douglas.
Yes, he does. He looks very much like Chris Jericho. That was always something thrown out there. So
there's Scott D'Amore, the hunk of chunk in his singlet, and then Joey Maggs, who just looks like a plain old-fashioned jobber. One thing I like about the Giant, they almost did the old school, like, late 70s Andre template with his matches.
Yes.
Just ludicrous moves, like, splashing them all at once and just throwing three guys around. It was really great. This is where I really enjoyed. They never, I think they always booked Giant strong.
Yeah.
A little flighty in the storylines. You know, he's with somebody, he's not, he isn't.
Right, yeah, he turned a lot.
Yeah, but the matches, they always booked him incredibly strong. And that's one thing I applaud WCW did for him when he was at his peak.
Yeah, I agree. So here he's one of the top faces on the WCW side. At this point, it's really him and Luger with the torchbearers and the main guys leading the way. So Giant had his shots at Hogan earlier in the year, kind of came up empty, and Luger was kind of the guy with Giant backing him up. So Giant beats the crap out of all three of these guys, a minute and a half, picks up the easy win. And then he, they build up on commentary the match with him and Savage at Sturgis coming up on Saturday night at Road Wild. So Giant is celebrating his win. Savage and Liz appear in the entranceway. Savage says Giant's out of control, and that's cool for him, though. And at Sturgis, the madness will be in control. He tells Giant to stay put because he doesn't want any of Savage. And then Giant comes after him, and Savage takes off. So, I always like that show, too, for the unpredictability of these segments. They always just seem like, things just happen and they move along, and we didn't get a million replays and a lot of formatted stuff. And this things always felt this very, it was a weird flow,
Mm-hmm. No, it was when they were paying attention and, they didn't have their heads up their asses, which would end up happening in the next year and a half. These nitros were very well formatted, mm-hmm. Believe it or not. They're very well put together. Sometimes, obviously they were a lot more formatted than Raw was, but Raw was starting to gain that aura of unpredictability.
Right.
So they were kind of all over the place, but they did that on purpose.
Right.
Whereas Nitro didn't really mean to. They were just screwed up, but that was a couple years later. At this point, Nitro, very formatic, very formulaic. As right now, the next thing that they're putting on is a Lex Luger montage, pimping his torture racks of Hogan. He also torture racked a few other guys in this stretch. It's funny, I really, getting back to Savage for a minute, I was really missing him in WWF in 97 and 98 because I just feel like he wasn't being used well enough. Yes, the DDP feud was awesome. I'm not.
Yeah, in 97 he was used well. As he gets into 98, he kind of becomes a little bit of a pawn. But I think 97 he had a strong year. 97 is kind of the year he reasserted himself as a competitor.
As the man.
Yeah, he's a great wrestler in the ring and a guy that can still bring a red hot feud. And for a guy that's had great feuds in the past, he brings another one out here. So, the thing with Nitro 2 is everything was very contained. And they'd always have, like, one show-long storyline going on, usually in the main event. And then everything else just had its segment, and that was it. We didn't get a lot of follow-up or build. Here's the Savage and Giant segment, and that's set up, and now we move on. So it was just an interesting format. So, yes. All right, this weekend on Saturday night will be the two-hour Road Wild pregame show, and they run through some of the guys that will be checking in and on there. And then we get that Lex Luger music video, like you mentioned. We get him racking Hogan, setting up their match later tonight.
What did you think about WCW doing their pay per? Were they doing pay per views on Saturdays, or were they on
just Road Wild was Saturday?
Okay, I was about to say, yeah, Road Wild was just
and
Saturday.
Sold out earlier in the year was Saturday. I think it moves to Sunday going forward. I'm not positive about that actually, but I know Road Wild was one of the few Saturday ones.
Well, they had to because they had to. To coincide with the Sturgis weekend.
Yeah, they always
night.
Did weird nights.
It's gone by then, so.
Yeah, they do. Starcade was like on Wednesday, I think, a lot of times during this period as well. So they always did kind of random things with a lot of their shows.
Were you a WCW Saturday Night watcher?
I was. Well, 97 is where I kind of started to taper off because I was talking to Grant Owens about this today because he was bragging about how cool it was that Saturday Night started at 3:05, and I said that's fucking stupid. 6:05 is Saturday Night. 97 is where I actually developed somewhat of a social life as I was nearing age 17. So before that, though, 94, 95, 96 was pretty much Saturday nights. If my parents went out and I was watching my sister or, if we were all home, I was pretty much holed up in front of the TV watching Saturday night. And I'd actually used to jot little I guess I started my podcast career early. I'd jot notes down and then call our buddy Jim afterwards. And we'd talk about it for a little while. So. Yes, this is what
boy,
I did. At
boy,
age 16.
Boy, what did that? Boy, what did that lead to? Well, that's three years into what you two would end up doing. You ended up taping them eventually, and they're lost in the archive somewhere. Yeah. So, I was just curious. I like the Saturday Night. It was still their little secondary show.
Yeah.
WWE really didn't have. Well, I mean, they had
Shotgun and Superstars are still on.
Yeah. They definitely weren't as. I have to admit though, they weren't as good as Saturday Night was in that aspect. Saturday Night was still a real storyline advancer.
Oh, yeah. Not a major storyline though. They'd have some major guys, but like you never saw like Hogan on there or anything. But maybe pretty much everyone but Hogan and maybe Nash and Hall were on there. Further, you know, it was, for NWO stuff it was the lower card guys, but the WCW guys were always on there.
Right.
But I agree. I thought Saturday Night was still a very good show and a lot of stuff. Yeah, you know, you had to watch it if you wanted the complete picture of WCW.
Right. Okay. So there you go. WCW Saturday Night, the precursor to Road Wild.
Yeah, that's a full night of WCW right there. 2 hour Saturday Night leads into the pay per view. So
yes.
All right, we got another tag match up next: High Voltage versus Public Enemy. Of course, Public Enemy. We talked about a little bit before. They came over from ECW, Johnny Grunge and Rocco Rock, a big brawling team. And High Voltage was two Power Plant guys, Kenny Chaos and Robbie Rage. You talk about juiced up dudes. These two guys are just jacked out of their minds.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at them right now. They're like falling out of their fucking skin. Yeah. These guys have an account at the pharmacy in Tampa. There's no doubt about that. These guys are ridiculous. Yeah. The other one of them, the guy with the blonde guy. I'm trying to remember which is which. I really don't remember. But
Chaos is the blonde guy.
Yeah, well, he looks like his hair's already fallen out. So I think he already overdosed. The other guy looks like a pizza maker, but
yeah. I liked Larry during this match because he kept getting on High Voltage's case for wasting time and taking their and showboating, and he gets very. He always just. That's what I liked about Larry in commentary. He'd call guys out for shit, and he was calling them out big time in this match for doing that stuff. So, late in the match, Public Enemy would get the win. Grunge would pin Rage with a roll up. So Public Enemy wins the match. And one of my other favorite little notes here for commentary, Tony warns us that Road Wild is an adult-themed pay-per-view with some eye-popping scenery. So, basically saying there's a lot of biker chicks with big boobs and tight shirts, so be careful.
Large tatas, so that may accidentally fall off, you never know.
Yeah, so that show, I don't think all their pay-per-views started at 8 yet, but that one must have, Saturday Night at 8, I'm guessing, with Saturday Night leading up to it, 6 to 8.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you wouldn't have the gap in between, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously Road Wild was weird because you're dealing with outdoors. You're dealing with, obviously, you got to do it on Saturday night. It's free. So they're all, they're obviously all hammered. So
right.
it's kind of like an outdoor concert. you weren't really sure what you were going to get out of the crowd.
No, definitely not. It was
fairly unpredictable.
Yeah, it was all chaos, complete chaos. Yeah. And just, you know, angry bikers. So, so after the match, Rage beats down Grunge after the bell. Chaos brings a shard of the broken table that was used during the match. Chaos holds it up and Rage runs Grunge into it, and they slam it down on Grunge's back. So High Voltage gets the last laugh at the end and stands tall. We're back. The Nitro Girls are getting down on the ramp like they usually do. And I thought this was pretty funny. Alex Wright comes out and dances with them. Then Mean Gene heads over to get a word with him. He's currently the Cruiserweight Champion. He's got a match at the pay-per-view with Chris Jericho. Alex starts speaking German, but Gene cuts him off and tells him, "Cut out the Wiener Schnitzel. Speak English. This is Detroit, damn it." So I always laughed at Gene was very did not like people who didn't speak English often on these shows. So Alex said he doesn't care. He basically calls Jericho a kitty cat instead of a lion heart. He says he's the greatest wrestler and the Cruiserweight champion, and he heads down to the ring for his match with Scotty Riggs. Scott, did you like or dislike that? Anytime a champion wrestled in WCW, it seemed to always be a title match. There were no non-title matches. Everything was for the title. Do you think that made these matches seem more important, or do you think it lessened the titles a little bit that anyone could get a title shot?
No, I love title matches. The more the merrier. You got to legitimize these guys. Don't worry about the challengers. You got to worry about the champions.
Don't think it kind of lessened it that you didn't need to like do anything to earn the title match? You know what I mean?
Well, in my opinion, it all depends on who it is.
Like this one, Scotty Riggs gets a title match.
Yeah, no, he doesn't deserve a title match. But I would say that it depends where you stick them. Like if this is the go home for the pay per view, I wouldn't give a title match to anybody now. It kind of kind of sucks for Jericho. You gotta write it upright. But I don't have a problem with the occasional title match on Nitro here and there. Maybe not every week. Maybe that's a bit much. But
I mean, it was pretty much any time a champion wrestled on Nitro, it was usually for a title.
Yeah. No, I'm saying I disagree with. But I don't have a problem with it being somewhat consistent, maybe put some kind of a plan in place where, maybe every other week or every couple weeks, but On the other hand, it's tough. I got to think about that now. Because on the one hand, it's always nice to have title defenses. You want your champions to fight. But on the other hand, you do kind of want to pump up pay-per-view title matches too. It's weird. They kind of did half and half, because obviously tonight is a big world title match, but you know, there was definitely more world title matches on Nitro than there were WWF title matches on Raw. You never saw a title match on Raw. Very rarely in the early stages of the late 90s, 96, 96, since Shawn won it at 12.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see a lot of title matches on Raw, right? Maybe a couple.
Yeah, you get some, but they were usually built up or announced.
Yeah,
you didn't just get, you know, every champion defending pretty much almost every week except for the world champion.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I liked fighting champions. I don't think there's any problem with that. But, yeah, you got to be a little judicious at the same time. And, you know, Scotty Riggs, really?
Yeah.
You know, Scotty Riggs. And it kind of cheapens – you don't want to cheapen Jericho's shot at the pay-per-view either. You know, so maybe not have him – be judicious with it. You know, maybe every few weeks, every couple weeks, perhaps. And focus on the Cruiserweight title, focus on the TV title. Even the U.S. title was not as defended as much as it should be. But at the same time, you got to be judicious. You know, it's not easy being a booker. We all sit here and think booking is easy, but it's really not. And they need to be a little more judicious with it. So I'd have to say I'm probably 50-50 on it. I like fighting champions, keeps the belts legit. But at the same time, you know, you're looking you know, you want to make sure your title matches on pay-per-view are still, mm-hmm. you know, big deals. Mind you, don't forget. That the pay-per-views in WCW were not taken as seriously as the pay-per-views in WWE. In the WWF, they treated their pay-per-views like gold. So right. title matches on free shows were few and far between. Whereas in the WCW, it was all about Nitro. It was about ratings.
Yeah, the pay-per-views are just part of the journey. That was all.
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't as big. That's the thing. To them, the pay-per-views were just Nitros on another
Although,
night.
Something WCW did that I liked, they'd always build like months ahead with pay-per-views. You know, they didn't just go month to month. Like, we knew, you know, in WWF, you know, outside of WrestleMania and maybe the Rumble, everything was month to month. Nothing was really long-term built.
Right.
WCW, they'd be like, all right, it's June. We're building this match for the August pay-per-view. We're going to have stuff for the July one as well. But this big match, you know, they'd announce it like 2 months ahead of time. You guys are going to fight. You know, it's the middle of August, but we're announcing the main event for Halloween Havoc. You know what I mean? It was just kind of cool. I always liked that, how they booked sometimes, you know, 2 months ahead and didn't have those guys wrestle the next month, so they'd really build to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know why that philosophy was the way it was.
And they weren't afraid to do a pay-per-view without the champion or without your big name. Like, they do random guys on top for pay-per-views. Like, you look at Slamboree this year. Still big names, but the main event was the Flair, Piper, and Kevin Green against, you know, six Nash and Hall, and that's not a match you would really expect the main event of pay-per-view, but they did it, and they didn't give a shit. So they said, all right, well, our big one's coming in, you know, Bash at the Beach with Rodman and everything else. So, you know, they built out that way.
Yeah. I think, again, it was the different style of thinking. WCW was not – titles were important, but not really. The fact that Hogan was the WCW champion was not as big a deal as the fact that he was the head bad guy, and we wanted – you know, and the whole – big premise was still WCW toppling the NWO, where in WWF, the title to them was like gold. I mean, literally, I mean, you know, obviously it is, but was like the thing. They treat their, you know, if you've been a fan as long as I have, or as long as JR has, they take being the WWF champion very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, this is my personal opinion, and if, you know, obviously, you're more than welcome to agree or disagree, go to our Facebook page or here on the board. I don't think WCW took their champion, their belts, as seriously as
the world title. I think they did.
See,
the world title.
They did and they didn't. I mean, they spray painted on it. And
yeah, but that was part of the whole thing. That's what made it important, was because this guy took this tradition and pissed on it by spray painting on the belt and stealing it. That was the whole crux of, you know, what the NWO was doing. So, no, I disagree with that.
See, I'm going to stick by that, because I just think that the belt, I think it was more Hogan running the company into the ground, and the belt was just kind of there. That's my take on it. And the WWF treated their world title as seriously. My point, the whole crux of it is, WCW didn't make the title match the last match, because I don't think they thought of it as big a deal as having the main storyline match.
When they had the world title on, generally it was last. I'm saying they went pay-per-views without a world title match.
I know, but my point is WWF didn't do that because to them, the World Wrestling Federation title is it, and it needs to be last every week every month on pay-per-view, no ifs, ands, or buts, or at least in the top two matches.
I will say this. I think the reason they didn't always have it is because Hogan was the champion. And Hogan didn't wrestle every show because he had limited dates. I think in a way it made it a bigger deal. Like, they went 2 months without him on pay-per-view. He didn't wrestle at Bash at Great American Bash. He didn't wrestle at Slamboree. He didn't wrestle again until Bash at the Beach, and that wasn't even a title match. So he goes from, God, I think he went from Super Brawl in February, because I don't think he, let me check quick. I don't think he defended the title of Spring Stampede. I think he goes from Super Brawl until Road Wild without a title match.
Well, we also have to take into account that the two rosters are very vastly different, too. WWF roster had to hustle because, they're not as star power hungry as, or star power laden as WCW was. Right. So take that into consideration, too.
So Hogan defended the title at Sold Out in Super Brawl. He was at Uncensored in the cage match. He didn't defend the title. Then Spring Stampede he's not at. He's not at Slamboree. He's not at the Great American Bash. So he goes 3 months without even being on pay-per-view as champion. Then he's at Bash of the Beach in a tag match. And then he challenges at Road Wild. So, I mean, he didn't defend the title for a while. He wasn't even on three straight pay-per-views, which is crazy to think about. But, you know, they were loaded enough. Their roster was deep enough to sell pay-per-views without him. So, and that's what they did. So, in a way, I think it made it feel like a big deal that, wow, we're getting a world title match now. We haven't even got one of these the last three pay-per-views. So, part of that was probably because it was Hogan and the way his contract was. But I don't know. You know,
I wonder if he still got a piece of the pay-per-view, even if he wasn't on. I'm sure he was.
No, I don't think he did. I think he had to be on. That's why there was always that story where he would conveniently duck out when he thought pay-per-views were going to suck, and then he'd come back and kind of be the savior and get the piece of the pie. So
Jesus. But so there you go. My point is, I mean, obviously, this argument, this debate we're having is very good, very lively. But at the same time, we have to take into account WCW's roster was jacked, and they could afford to kind of futz around with the belt.
Well, that's my point. Stuff. I think it was kind of smart to do so. So I don't think it devalues the title in a way, you know, roundabout way. It almost makes it more important. But they could afford to do it. They didn't need to have him on.
I think you're thinking that way. I don't think they were thinking that way.
No, they were doing it mainly because of Hogan. Yeah.
Yeah, they were thinking. I think, in their opinion, the storyline drove the pay-per-view.
No, I don't think it was even that. I think it was just that Hogan had limited dates, so they had to come up with storylines to carry the pay-per-view.
Well, yeah, well, exactly. So you're almost giving them more credit than they probably deserve.
Yeah, right.
But the fact of the matter is regardless of whether it was intentional or not, WCW's roster was deeper that they could afford to do it.
Right.
WWF couldn't.
They could run main events out there with, you know, Luger, Giant, Flair,
Savage.
Piper, Savage, Page. They had a lot of guys that could run out there to carry pay-per-view.
Vince didn't. You know, he pretty much had Brett, Steve, Shawn, and Taker. That was it, pretty much. And you know, Vader occasionally. But we won't get into WWF tonight. Anyway, I'm reading your perusing your comments as we're, and you were very high on. Tell me why you were very high on Alex Wright in this stretch.
I liked this gimmick.
Das Wunderkind.
Yes, I mean, I didn't care for Das Wunderkind, Grandpapa. I didn't care for him early on. I'm a big fan of Germans from especially from Beer Fest. And what is my unhealthy obsession with Eastern Europe and the communist bloc? I'm big into Russians. I like Norsemen. I'm big into Germans.
Evil Finns and Swedes.
Yes. Vikings.
You like a lot of pale people.
Yes.
Not a lot of sun going on.
I like pale people that are into steroids and blonde hair. So.
Yes, and going into politics. Yeah.
So anyway.
You're a big Alex Wright guy.
Yeah, at this point. I didn't really care for him, but when he was just kind of a nerdy face that was just kind of going through, you know, a lot of the baby face undercard motions. But I liked him with this little bit of snarl to him. You know, he was like oblivious. I always like obtuse oblivious heels, and that's what this guy was. You know, he's out there dancing and thinking he's a tough guy, and he's skinny little jackass, but... His work rate actually got really, really good at this point. I thought he was putting on some great matches. And I reviewed pretty much his whole year of Nitro. And you can check that out at the message board. And I really kind of watched him develop throughout the year. And I remember being pretty impressed. I thought he put on some good matches. And, this match at Riggs is okay. But, I was really looking forward to the match at Jericho he had. So I thought Wright deserved this little title reign he had. And he'd actually get a run with another belt in a few weeks as well. So, I thought he was good in 97. I liked him.
He was a champion, and again, the champions have to be showcased. You don't have to have title matches with them all the time.
All right, let's not get into that again.
We'll get to that again. So anyway, we're an hour two.
Hour two, Shivani Tanay and now Bobby Heenan has replaced Larry Zbysko, but is not the last we'll see of Larry tonight. So back for hour two, and Tony, of course, dubs it the hour that chased the competition away. So he always had to get his little digs in. I thought this was a funny line, too. He mocks Bobby's gaudy tie, but Bobby said at least he owns his own tie as a shot at Tony. So I was, you know, a lot of people didn't care for Bobby and Tony. They thought they didn't get along, but I think early on they were pretty good. And Bobby, you know, when the NWO kicked in, he got a little weird, but it wasn't until like 98 where he really started to mail it in. I thought Bobby from his debut in 94 through about 97-ish was he was still pretty good. It was after this where he just clearly didn't give a shit anymore.
Well, there was always that when it came to Tony. It was always, well, first of all, for Bobby, I mean, he missed home. Right. He kind of hints at it in his DVD. He always missed WWF. He always missed him. That was his home. It'll always be his home. He missed Gorilla. You know, he missed the things that made him comfortable. Tony, a lot of people think that he was treated like crap in the WWF when he was there in 89 and mid 90. And so whenever WWF guys went into his domain, he wanted to get his little jabs in and kind of get back at him a little bit. So a lot of people think he was very abrasive and very confrontational to Bobby, kind of as a, you know, an FU to the WWF people, saying you're going to treat me like crap 5 years ago. Well, I'm going to stick it back at you. Same thing with Jesse was there in 93.
I don't think that played a role. I think it was more that Tony was just miserable. And I actually read something recently that he said he never should have left the WWF, that he made a mistake leaving when he did in 1990, that he should have stuck it out. And, you know, he thinks maybe he could have, you know, had better luck there because he came back to WCW. He thought maybe he was going to get the vice president position that Eric Bischoff got in 93. And then he ends up kind of getting demoted by Bischoff as the main commentary guy until Bischoff went heel. So, you know, I think he was just kind of bitter at this point. And I think maybe he takes that out on Bobby. But I liked Tony still here. I think, you know, the same as Bobby, he didn't really get overbearing and lame until like 98, 99. I thought at this point he was still really good. You know, he knew how to get the stories across. He knew how to convey the action. He knew how to call the moves, which I thought was important. And he just knew the product. So I thought, you know, he was perfect for what they were looking for.
Yeah, I mean, the commentary was still solid. But you're right, Bobby eventually just kind of like goes through the motions, and eventually, you know, they're all going through the motions. Really, Mike Tenay's the only, you know,
right guy trying,
knucklehead who's trying his hardest, and nobody really cares.
Well, it paid off. He's had a job ever since, and the other guys haven't. So,
yeah, well, that's true too.
All right, so we get an interview with Lex Luger in the aisle, and he basically just calls out Hogan, says, you know, he's focused on Road Wild, but, you know, when the shot title shot comes calling, you don't turn it down. So he guarantees he'll make history tonight when he racks Hogan and becomes the champion once again. So I thought it was a great promo. I thought it really made the main event seem like a big deal, and I'll give him that. They really, when they had a match they wanted to promote on a show, they really pushed the shit out of it throughout the whole program, and they really made it seem like a big deal. So I thought that was great here. Throughout this whole show, you really were getting jacked up for Luger Hogan.
Yes, I totally agree with you. They did that well. They did that well. When they had a big match that they really wanted you to pay attention to and wanted you to stay on, you know, past the 10 o'clock hour and everything, they did a good job at that. So I'll give them credit for that when they were paying attention, which obviously they were doing in 97. They did a good job with that.
All right, so Nitro Girls dance again for us, and then we head to Vincent versus Booker T. Of course, Vincent is the former Virgil. Yep. He was part of the NWO, and of course, I loved the NWO B team music.
Was that? Did you?
I almost liked it better than the actual song. I don't know about you.
It was all right. I liked it. The B song was okay. Trivia question for you, JR.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, what baseball team hat is Booker T wearing as he's coming up the aisle to the ring? Do you remember?
Was it a Yankee hat?
It was a Yankee hat. Very good.
Well, he's from Harlem.
That is true. I don't think it seemed out of place, though, but with their tights on. But and you know what? I'm walking into a joke here, but that's what makes the show great. I do admit when I'm wrong on a lot of things, and I always during the Harlem Heat run, I always thought that Stevie Ray was the better wrestler.
I don't think you're way. Oh well, I don't think anyone ever thought he was a better wrestler, but I could see where people maybe thought he was gonna be bigger than Booker just because of his size, you know. You know, Booker didn't really. Well, it was around this time where people started to take notice of Booker, and he was getting more singles matches on Raw and
Nitro.
On Nitro, rather. So, yeah, he was getting more singles matches and opportunities. So I think it was around this time that people maybe started to see a little bit of something in Booker. And by 98, he'd pretty much be wrestling solo mainly. So,
yeah. Actually, they both have Yankee hats on. Stevie Ray's, he's just got his on back.
All It was great because it's like the original NWO theme was like clearly like a porn song, and this is like just like a cheesier porn song. I just it's just so great.
I would say it's like NWO for the jazz lover in your life.
Oh,
like,
I love this song.
It's like so happy and bubbly.
It was.
Hey guys, it's the NWO B team. Look,
as soon as I hear it, I take this you know trip back to 1997 in my mind, and I picture Buff Bagwell smirking, walking out to the ring, and Scott Hudson. Scott Norton came coming out looking like the little 10-year-old bully that he was with a slick back hair and his little vest and his angry sunglasses. And I don't know. I just always reminded me of good times back in 97 when I heard this song.
Like, no, it's like NW, you know, the A song was, you know, NWO by Anthrax. And the B song, NWO by Kenny G. It's,
yes.
Like, it's like so light and bubbly. Look, it's the bubbly NWO song.
It's a great. I love it. I love it so much. So, all right. So we get Vincent versus Booker T. And Vincent heads out by himself, which is odd because he always had usually the B team rolled in numbers. So kind of odd that Harlem Heat actually outnumbered him. We reveal that Harlem Heat will be taking on the aforementioned Buff Bagwell and Scott Norton, the great Vicious and Delicious at Road Wild, one of the greatest tag team names, I think, of all time. Vincent, of course, why you don't like it, Vicious and Delicious?
Goofy.
Oh, come on. That's an awesome. That is pro wrestling right there. Vicious and Delicious.
That sounds like something that, like, I don't know. Sounds like something a Crockett would come up with. Or, hey, let's call these two guys Vicious and Delicious.
That's an awesome team name. Delicious, of course, was a Crazy Eye Killer's boy in Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yo, Delicious! Give this motherfucker a tissue. So Vincent attacks off the bell, and we're underway there. And Booker comes back quickly, and this match actually goes less than a minute. Booker hits him with a sidekick and gets the win. And the Harlem Heat, actually, they kind of beat up Vincent a little bit after, so it was kind of weird. Almost like
I thought Delicious was the name of the convenience store clerk down the street from Graham's house.
Yes. No, that was on B.
Yes. Hey, Delicious, give me a pack of smokes. All right. So, anyway. All right. So, yeah. So, Booker looks good here. And a good win for him.
Well, it's weird because they almost make Vincent vulnerable. They almost make him like the face. You almost feel bad for him because he gets the shit kicked out of him after the match. Kind of odd. All right, so DDP comes out for an interview, and we find out that he'll be taking on Ric Flair later tonight. That was the other thing with Nitro. The matches, sometimes they really hyped matches, and other times they just threw it out there halfway through the show, like with no build, like, oh, Paige versus Flair, okay. Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But that was their modus operandi from day one with Nitro. You know, they always had big matches, so I guess it was just standard operating procedure at that point. So Paige basically talks about his confidence, and he gives 120% in the ring, and he says him and Flair, have a lot in common. They both hate Hogan and Savage, but he knows that Flair has been courting Kurt Hennig for the Horseman, who Paige hates because Hennig turned on him back a couple months ago. And as far as he's concerned, Hennig is a Horseman, and basically he's going to take it out on Flair. And he thinks that Hennig is feeding Flair to Paige. So there you go. Barbarian versus Wrath is up next, and this is the match I talked about before with Wrath actually looking pretty good. Wrath, of course, portrayed by Brian Clark, the former Atom Bomb. Part of this little band of oddities with James Vandenberg in his feud with Glacier. I liked Wrath. I thought he was actually pretty over with the WCW fans. He had a good look. And, I thought he worked well in the ring as well. So
he didn't wrestle with a mask on, huh? I just realized that. I totally forgot.
No, he did not.
Nope. Yeah, as he's facing Barbarian right now.
Yeah, no, he did not. So Barbarian, of course, you know my feelings on him as well. I thought...
But he's one of the greatest.
Yeah, he was great here in WCW. And this is a pretty good match for a big man match. And Wrath pins him clean with the death penalty. And, match only goes just 3 minutes. I think if they had another few minutes, it could have really gotten good as they started, really beating the shit out of each other.
What was the... I'm trying to think what the death penalty was. Let me shoot ahead here. Trying to see what the death penalty actually was. I'm trying to remember. I remember it being a pretty decent move. I can't remember what... Some kind of a backbreaker or something?
No, it was like a pump handle slam, I think.
Let's see. Oh, Barbarian goes to the top rope here. We're not doing live. Oh, here we go. Oh, I just missed it. He was doing play. He was,
Ming comes out.
Yes. Let's see. Fast forward a little bit here.
So Vandenberg, as they're doing that, Vandenberg backs Wrath away as they try and take off as Ming protects his partner. And, they made Ming always look like a badass here. So the Faces of Fear, one of my favorite tag teams, of course.
Actually, to be honest with you, it was kind of like a...
Actually, it was like a rock bottom, kind of?
Yeah, it was a rock bottom, like a bookend.
Yeah, you're a Nagi. You're right. So, okay. So Mean Gene hits the ring, and this is another thing I liked about Nitro. It was almost ECW-esque. Things just flowed together. We go for this match, and then Mean Gene gets in the ring, and the Steiners come out. You know, these things kind of blend into each other and kind of keep the flow going. So the Steiners come out. They look to the entrance, ready for their big announcement, and out walks Ted DiBiase. They all head to the ring together. Gene wants answers. Ted's been gone for 2.5 months, and Gene says, "What are you doing here, Ted DiBiase? Last time we saw you, you were the benefactor, the money man for the NWO. Ted said he's been inside the NWO looking out, and now he's ready to be on the outside looking in. Sometimes you have to back up, take a deep breath, and take a look at what really is important. His father died in the ring, and Ted vowed that he would make a name for himself in wrestling and become a star. A while back, he got caught up and lost track of what happened, what was important, rather. He used to live by the cliche, every man has a price, but that means that every man pays the price. He's made bad choices, but that ends now. He's seen the error of his ways and knows he has to prove himself to the Steiners and everybody else. And they'll start in Sturgis as he helps the Steiners take apart what he helped build, the NWO. He promises they'll take the heart of the NWO by taking back the tag titles, which the Outsiders have had a stranglehold on since they debuted, pretty much. The Steiners know about pride and tradition. They'll take the title Saturday. Hall and Nash come out. They go back and forth and basically rag on DiBiase. And that sets the stage. So what did you think? Because it was kind of weird seeing DiBiase as a face for the first time, really, in forever. So outside of, you know, UWF or whatever. But, you know, I remember at the time not really being thrilled with the decision. But I was a huge Million Dollar Man fan. So,
well, I was too. But I think he was getting to that age where it was time for him to maybe become more of like a babyface fatherly figure. He's getting a little older, and you know, maybe it was time for him to kind of a different perspective, a good challenge for him. Maybe he needed a challenge. Maybe he didn't want to be like these other guys in WCW that kind of sat on their laurels and be the same kind of guys. And maybe he just wanted to change his character and kind of challenge himself, because he hadn't really been a babyface since, like you said, since, you know, probably 85, 86 in the UWF in Mid-South. So I don't know. I thought it was a challenge. I didn't really have a problem with it. I will say this, though. Obviously, as JR knows, and a lot of our friends know, I'm a huge mark for belts. I love wrestling belts. And I don't think there were ever an uglier set of belts than the WCW tag team straps. I thought they were the ugly, as Hall and Nash are holding them now, the ugliest looking things I've ever seen. They were so tiny. They were like, they were like foam. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. They look so small with these two huge dudes. And but anyway, to answer your question, I thought maybe it was a nice challenge for DiBiase to do something different.
I forget. Have you read his book? I forget.
I didn't. Dr. G read his
book. Right. Yeah. Okay. I want to ask him if this was around the time that he actually did clean up his life. Because I know for a while there he was big into drugs.
Actually, to be honest with you, it might be it, because our man Dr. G interviewed him on our radio station, and it was like I hadn't left the station yet, and I left in June of 98. So it was sometime in this stretch between here and June of 98 that our man Dr. G interviewed him on radio, and he was already running that Christian
– right.
The Christian wrestling fit. So he definitely had made a turn at this point.
It had to be around this time because he was gone for 2.5 months. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So it's kind of neat. I had no problem with it. It was a change of pace. Something different.
Yeah. So anyway, so he's going to manage the Steiners now. Kind of an odd pairing, but yeah. It was a very odd pairing.
Yeah.
We're back. The Nitro girls are dancing again, earning their salaries for sure.
Yeah.
And we hit the highlight of Nitro each week, the Lee Marshall 1-800 Collect Road Report. He's at the Nitro party in Denver, which is where Nitro is the next week. Of course, makes his usual lame Bobby Heenan joke, and Bobby tells him to climb Pike's Peak and jump off it. So,
yeah. No, this one was you have it written down. He says, quote, Denver is home to the Rockies, Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, and the Mint. One of the biggest attractions is in a museum dedicated to Buffalo Bill. There used to be one dedicated to Wimpy Weasel, but nobody ever went there. Shut up.
Oh, I love the Lee Marshall Road Report.
He is horrendous.
I always felt bad for this guy. It's like he said he'd find people that are all getting ready for a Nitro party, but it's like, you know, what the hell? You know, really?
I know.
What's he doing out with
As we always joked, he was probably doing it from like the office down the hall.
There's no doubt about it.
He was about as much in Denver as you and I are right now. So
No doubt in my mind he was not really in Denver. I mean, it makes no sense.
Seriously doubt it.
I believe more in Denver the Last Dinosaur than I do.
So, okay.
Yeah, he was in Denver.
Yes. All right. So there you go. Lee Marshall. Putz. Next.
Best known for his AWA women's special. Actually, in WCW, he was known as a women's wrestling specialist. They always brought him in, and he had no clue what the fuck he was talking about.
If that's your claim to fame, then you're pretty bad.
All right, up next, one of my next favorite. I loved a lot of WCW theme songs. This was another good one. Of course, that means Psychosis is making his way out to the ring along with Sonny Ono, and they were taking on Conan. Conan is part of the NWO B team as well, so we get to hear that song again. So we talk about how Tony talks about DiBiase was the first unforced defection from the NWO, and Tanay wonders if it's the beginning of the end. Conan will win the match with a Tequila Sunrise submission hold. After the match, Rey Mysterio hobbles down on his crutches. He'd been out of action for a while. He had knee surgery. On TV, it was explained that Conan had busted his knee up. So Rey makes it down to the ring. Conan kicks the crutches away and then steps on it. And as he goes to pick it up, Rey takes the other crutch and just bashes Conan with it. And Rey shows that his knee's all better. He hops around and helps Psychosis to his feet. So Tanay says the NWO is now crumbling because Rey Mysterio's back and tricked Conan and Teddy DiBiase. So that was that was the thing with these WCW commentators. Any little minor thing happened and NWO was dying and WCW was coming back. And that was their big thing like every week. So, all right, another tag match, Scott. Glacier and Ernest Miller versus Silver King and Damian. Silver King and Damian were two Mexican imports, two more lucha stars. Glacier, we talked about during our last night's review. Ernest Miller was brought in as his buddy, a karate specialist. And of course, I believe in real life, he was like Eric Bischoff's son's karate instructor or something like that. And that's how they got to know each other. So a legit tough guy, though, Ernest Miller, and a legit karate star. So Miller and Glacier would win the match 3-23 with a kick off the top rope. Again, just a pretty standard tag match to give Glacier and Miller some time.
I think it was pretty funny seeing Ernest Miller standing there trying to be serious while styrofoam snow was falling over him. It was pretty funny, too. Glacier, I always thought looked like Dan Spivey with a flat top.
Yeah, it could have been.
He kind of what was Dan Spivey's? Oh crap! Gary opened the door again, and now I can't remember it. What was his Starship? Oh crap! Eagle something.
Yeah, Starship Eagle and Starship
Eagle something with a when he looked like an NWA in like 86 right. or 84, 85. Yeah, Starship Eagle something or other. All right, this is where we're gonna get to a point. Well, I'll let you get to this point because this is always a bane of my existence when it comes to the NWO storyline. But
what, Eric Bischoff?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute though.
Okay,
but, so Miller, good match. And of course, as we know, as we've emphasized on our regular WWF Vintage Vaults, Bischoff and WCW got the A team of Mexican wrestlers, and Vince certainly got the B team of Mexican wrestlers. Yes. More like the R team of Mexican wrestlers.
So Eric Bischoff comes out. He talks about last week how the Giant and Larry Zbyszko should have been arrested for battery, disregard for law. He brings out J.J. Dillon, who claims he says J.J. needs to find a new diet. Dillon comes down to the ring. Eric said he wants to make things clear. The Giant came out and chokeslammed Eric last week, and if Giant lays another finger, he will sue him for everything he will ever own. Larry as well. He wants J.J. to tell him that Larry... tell him that he won't sue Larry, but if he ever lays a finger on Eric again, Eric will take his left foot and kick him right between the eyes. JJ says, I'm sure Larry heard your message. So nothing much going on there. And why, Scott, does this anger you so much?
I understand Bischoff being part of the NWO. I didn't like it in the beginning, but I can understand you need a kind of guy to... I don't understand why he needed his own promos. What was the whole point of that?
He was the leader of the faction.
Yeah, but he was on with Hogan earlier. Did he really need to come back by himself?
Well, they were starting to push they were starting to push the thing with Zbyszko, which was going to lead to a match. So,
yeah, I don't know. I thought that this is where you started to see. This is probably one of your first early cracks. It really wouldn't make a big difference until mid to late 98. But now you're starting to see the whole Bischoff is not disseminating between Bischoff the character and Bischoff the administrator of WCW. I never was a big fan of him in the NWO. However, he was good to help promote Hogan and the other guys. Mm-hmm. I just never understood all these having to come out here by himself and having his own storylines and his own matches. I never understood that.
I don't know. It never really bothered me too much. I mean, it was a template that Vince would use, you know. So, hour three, Shivani, Tanay, and Bobby Heenan again. Unprecedented hour three, Scott. Very unprecedented. Nitro Girls once again dance. DDP versus Ric Flair is up next, and a pretty long match for this night anyway, just under 8 minutes. Paige win by disqualification when Kurt Hennig got involved and attacked Paige. So, another solid match. We're reminded Flair will take on Six on Saturday. They've kind of been feuding on and off throughout the year as well. We had the match, the six-man at Slamboree, and then they fought again. In the tag match, the Outsiders fought Flair and Piper at the Great American Bash, and Six was involved with that. So they've been having a pretty big feud. Six has really been attacking Flair for being, holding them down and all the usual kind of young guy stuff. So
I just realized something.
Yes.
Did Shivani change his shirt? I think he had like a gray or a beige polo shirt.
Oh, it's some person in the third hour. You got to mix things up. You know, sweating then, through the other shirt. You gotta, you know, trick it out.
And then third hour, he has now on a black polo shirt.
Hmm.
Well, probably was sweating.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I'm like, where did he change though? When did he get up? Did he do it under the desk? Did he whip it out and, you know, dance for the car? What did he do? It was very strange. How did he get time to change the polo shirt? I'm happy to see Flair, as always. If you ask Dr. G, he'll say he should never be mid-card, but that's, you know, some of us NWA guys have tunnel vision in that aspect. But DDP, clearly one of the hot faces. Would you put him in that Luger giant?
He was getting there.
One of the top faces right now. Sting obviously doesn't count because he hasn't really been on camera much. But would you put DDP in that upper realm with Giant and Luger?
He was getting there. You know, early in 97, that's kind of when he made his mark, when he gave Scott Hall the Diamond Cutter and threw Nash over the ropes and said, fuck you to the NWO. And then the feud with Savage has kind of legitimized him as a major player. So I'm not going to say he's fully there yet. By the end of the year, I think he would be heading into 98. But you know, they're slowly starting to build him to that point. He's just like a step below Luger and Giant.
Okay.
He's
so
getting
he's very, 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 very high mid card.
Yeah. He's getting there. The feud with Savage has really helped elevate him, I think.
Okay.
So anyway, Paige wins and, Flair and Hedig, double team him a bit after, and then he makes the comeback and runs them off. So, all right, up next, so we have one more match before we get to our main event, Los Villanos versus Liz Mark Jr. and our old friend Hector Garza. Nothing much going on here. 5 minutes, just a chance to kill some time and run through some storylines. Typical Lucha match for Nitro. The Villanos get the win.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and then, again, to emphasize what I said earlier, Bischoff, thanks to Conan, had the A-list Mexican wrestlers, whereas Vince, who had no contact, ended up getting the Z-list of Mexican wrestlers. Yes.
Okay, so it's now time for Mean Gene comes into the ring with J.J. Dillon. And we talk about the Sting rumors. JJ tells us it's been almost a year since anyone in WCW has even talked to Sting. A lot of people in management question Sting's loyalties, and trust has been a powerful commodity. And by the way, I love JJ in this role. I thought he was very good, very underrated.
I did too. I
thought he another guy that brought a lot of legitimacy. He always spoke intelligently and clearly, always got the point across, never rambled. And he was a guy you could believe had power, you know. He just very believable in the role. So he said he understands more than anyone how Sting must have felt. Maybe Sting dealt with the situation better than management because his actions prove he is beyond behind his friends and peers in WCW. However, the lines of communications are down, and WCW needs Sting in the ring desperately. So he's tried every means possible to communicate him. He's been here all day, has not seen Sting at all, but he's heard from reliable sources that Sting would be here, and he wishes Sting would come look at him eye to eye in the ring. He has an opponent for Sting. He's brought a valid contract that has been signed by a free agent looking for a match. He wants Sting to come down and sign it. The crowd starts to erupt. JJ and Gene look up. Sting rappels down to the ring. Sting hops in the ring. JJ has a big grin on his face. Gene congratulates JJ. He says they're past the point of apologies. He can't undo what happened last year, and that was before he was in charge. JJ says he'll rebuild the trust, and he gives Sting a contract to take on Kurt Hennig. So this is Sting's chance to finally get back in the ring. Sting grabs a contract, tears it up, and leaves. JJ grabs his arm, tries to stop him. Sting just shakes him off and takes off. And JJ says they're going to do everything they can to fix things. He won't give up. And him and Gene take off. So, you know, a lot of build, a lot of hype, and then they tease him and Hennig, which no one really cared to see. But, I mean, I get the point. I know what they were doing. They wanted to basically build it to where Sting says he wants Hogan and no one else. But a little bit of a disappointment, I think. For a 100th episode, you thought maybe something major would happen with Sting. I guess this is a big thing, him showing up and talking to Dillon. But still, teasing a match with him and Hennig was not really anything special.
Yeah, that's kind of underwhelming. You obviously didn't want to... This was Luger's night, so... I'm sure they didn't want to find a way to kind of understate Luger by blowing it out with Sting. You know how examples we have when we talk about, you know, certain matches at WWF pay-per-views. You don't want to overdo this. You don't want to forget this, you know, Dolph Ziggler cashing in because you have other matches, things like that. This was Luger's night, so I don't think you wanted to totally go bonkers with Sting, at least have him show up and give a legitimate contract and get a storyline out there and then have Sting kind of keep you in limbo.
Right, good point.
But at least have him there, you know.
All right, and that leads us to our main event for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship, Lex Luger, Hollywood Hogan, the match before the pay-per-view match. The crowd was really into this, really starting to buzz. It felt like a big match. They really knew how to build a big match feel, I thought, WCW. That, you know, between the commentary and the announcements and the music and the build and everything else. You know, commentary was good here, of course, as usual. Back and forth, a lot of back and forth. Nash got involved, tried to help out. Savage gets involved. Luger fights them all off. Gets the rack on Hogan. The crowd starts revving up, and Hogan submits. And, of course, one of the classic moments, Randy Anderson, the referee, jumping up and down, screaming for the bell with an elated look on his face. The crowd explodes. You know, the match is you know, I gridded it a 2. It's 9 minutes. It's nothing special. But the atmosphere and the finish and the hype just really carry this to being almost mythical levels. Luger drops Hogan. Randy Anderson gives him the belt. Luger's running all over the place. Tony's going crazy. The locker room empties out. They join Lex in the ring. Lex holds the belt up high. His comrades surround him and hold him up on their shoulders. Bobby says this puts a big dent in the NWO, and Lex heads to the back, and the announcers recap the rest of the night, saying it was one of the most memorable moments in NWO history. We go to the back. Champagne's flowing. Giant rubs the spray paint off the belt, and we cut to Hogan in his locker room flipping out. He says he'll get the belt back in Sturgis. Savage calls it a fluke, and that's it. So a great finish to cap off. You know, they wanted to make the 100th episode a big deal. I think they did that with this title change. Unfortunately, it would be short-lived. Hogan would win the belt back 6 days later at Road Wild. You know, I've seen a lot of back and forth. Should they have done the title change at Road Wild? Should they have not done a title change at all? Did it make sense to do it on TV? But like you said earlier, WCW is all about the ratings, about the TV ratings. And, you know, I mentioned this in the comments on this post as well. WCW's core base was going to buy the pay-per-view anyway. They weren't going to not buy it because there was a title change 6 days earlier. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't going to all of a sudden say, oh, we're not going to order this pay-per-view anymore. I mean, if you're going to order the pay-per-view, you're probably going to order it regardless. So maybe this gives you extra ammunition to see will Hogan win the belt back or can Luger hold on to it. So I didn't mind them switching the belt here.
Well, two things. Number one, any of these guys look at the belt when they're holding it and realize whether they're holding it upside down or right side friggin' up?
Yeah.
Because Luger holds it up. Yeah, I won. The belt's upside down. Toolbox. Secondly, the run-ins didn't hurt this. Great moment. There's this guy in the ring. Do you remember the guy with the tan shorts and that he was like chunky and he had this like burgundy t-shirt and he was balding? I don't know. He just didn't seem to fit with everybody else. It just seemed really weird who this weird guy was.
Was it Scott, referee Scott Dickinson?
Maybe it was. I don't know. He was in like regular.
Yeah, he might have already been dressed down.
He wasn't like a fan that like ran. Oh, yeah.
No, Luger, I think it's probably Scott. I think it's probably Scott Dickinson.
Okay, it probably was somebody like that. It just looked like he just looked out of place. Yeah, unbelievable moment as Big Show, as Giant gets hit in the face with the belt by accident by Luger. But
and a good feel good moment.
Yeah, great moment. Great moment. I think they just did it to pop the. Yeah, see, perfect example of how the free show was more important to them than the pay-per-view. Luger, they instead of just having the match at Road Wild and having Luger win there, they have him win here, pop the rating that they were already getting beating WWF at the time, and then just have Hogan win it back 6 days later.
Did but it made Nitro feel, yeah, well, because it made Nitro feel can't miss, so I'm cool with that. Also,
did
they
Hogan
had,
have to win the next week.
Yes, well, the title had to be on Hogan because they're billing to Hogan Sting. So
right,
I think if you're going to debate anything, I think the debate is around the fact that they shouldn't have even done this because Hogan needed to be built as a dominant champion until Sting, you know, took the title off him. I'm okay with it being a 6 day reign because it keeps that dominance. You can almost say, all right, this is kind of a fluky win. He gets the belt back and oh shit, now we're back to this again. So any longer than this, I think it would have been a bad move. So I'm okay with it. I like that they pimped it. It wasn't just like a hot shot match that they threw out there. They did plug it the week before. So I don't know. This is one I'm okay with, you know.
And for the first time, one thing we need to focus on, and I remember watching this both on the DVD that this match is on. I think it's on Greatest. Oh, you know what? This is on the Greatest Superstars of the 90s DVD. And it's also obviously watching it now. This is one of the first times that we actually saw some legitimate backstage stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Nitro. Did not see very often. You saw on the one side, you saw the babyface or the WCW locker room, everybody celebrating, champagne. Meanwhile, on the NWO side, Hogan's pissed off. He's flipping tables,
right,
sparking stuff at Savage and Nash and Hall. They're all grumpy and pissed off, and Hogan's beside himself. By the way, I can't remember the last time that Hogan was almost mustacheless.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was like, doing that. He was doing that movie, the Assault on Devil's Island, or whatever. So he had shaved it.
So But yeah, he's like pushing the camera away and everything. There's big time stuff going on. Admittedly, big time stuff at the end of this Nitro in terms of.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'll give him this. Nitro never felt like a throwaway episode. Every Nitro stuff happened. You know, things happened every week. So it was never just like, oh, that was kind of a holding pattern Nitro. You know, they usually had something going on.
Right.
So, you know, this is a good episode, a very good celebration for the 100th. You know, a lot of matches. The only difference is Nitro usually had at least one or two matches that went, you know, maybe over 10 minutes or so. This had pretty much everything under 10 minutes, which is rare for a Nitro. But a lot of big storyline advancement, a very good go-home show. You know, if you're on the fence about Road Wild, I think this maybe would have pushed you over. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed most Nitros in 97. And this is, you know, one that actually had a rare feel-good finish to it.
I love Randy Anderson's reaction to when Hogan taps out. He's like, "Yeah," with his little puggy face.
Oh yeah, yeah, jumping up and down and calling for the bell, and it's great.
It's crazy,
iconic. So, all right, we get a little bit of feedback, Scott. Why don't we bang through this and then we'll take a break.
Okay, let me go back here.
I'll start it off. Corey Ferris first. Can't say much about this one, but I looked at the card and went, holy shit, the show had 13 matches on TV with a dark match as well. But I think this is one of the more memorable Nitro shows WCW did with then beating Hogan, who had held the belt for around a year. Only issue is Hogan won the fucking belt back a week later, which is just WCW bullshit booking. Oh well, Luger had his big moment in the sun.
Okay, go ahead, keep going. For some reason, the page is not
changing. No problem. Corey Mack. The vaunted 100th episode of Nitro went 3 hours and had a lot of excitement. The main event saw Lex Luger give Hollywood Hogan a rare TV loss and capture the WCW world title. The crowd went crazy, and I never understood the logic. Keep the belt on Hogan strong for Sting, which is the obvious direction. Besides, it's Luger. Still?
Yeah, I'll let you know when I'm I'll let you know when I'm ready. For some reason, it's taking too long.
Ed Harris. A jam-packed episode with some great moments, though having Luger win the title and promptly lose at the pay-per-view doesn't make either Hogan or Luger look very good. It makes the moment, as great as it is, come off like a cheap ratings ploy, which it probably was. Weird to see WCW do something like that when they're winning. Also weird to see Ted DiBiase as a good guy when you've only ever seen him as a heel. Shame nothing really came of it. He's always brought some decent fire to his promos. It could have been interesting in the role. The Flair Page match is also decent, although I always thought that to get Flair in the figure four and small package, the guy who comes in to make the safe spot is kind of goofy. Still, Page's lone wolf routine was entertaining enough, and as a complete show, it's quite good. All right, two more. I'm just going to finish them off. Jay Hinchy.
All right, go ahead.
100th episode of WCW Nitro is a three-hour show from Auburn Hills with a memorable moment in WCW history. Luger ends the Hollywood Hogan run and becomes WCW champion. I remember watching this live and going crazy when Luger won the title. Sadly, it would only last 5 days as Hogan wins the belt back at Road Wild. I never understood why WCW did things like that, having a world title change for free when they could have done it on pay-per-view. Sometimes it's a good thing, but other times not, because you don't want to give away too many things for free. And this is one time I really do think it was okay. And finally, Mr. Austin Pfeff.
Mr. Pfeff.
Didn't get a chance to review the whole show, but did watch Hogan Luger. Really good title match for TV. It's just a shame that they didn't run the ball with Luger a little bit longer than they did for the rest of the card. By looking at it, for Nitro's 100th episode, nothing else seems too special. So there's your feedback for the August 4th, 97 episode of Nitro. It's kind of a sprint tonight, Scott. I hope everyone enjoyed the hectic pace of the show.
Yeah, it's actually a great episode. If you could find it somewhere, maybe you could find it on on YouTube or I don't know. You can maybe our friend J.O. could help you out with it. Yeah. It's an interesting episode. The matches are actually not too bad. Great storyline advancement. Works well. So if you get the opportunity to check it out, please do. It's actually one of the better Nitros.
Yeah, good stuff. So all right, Scott, let's take a break. When we come back, we're gonna have our NFL Week 3 predictions, sir. But why don't you tell us why we're going to break?
Because
what?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW ROH and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Yes, WrestleChat.net, indeed, your home for everything pro wrestling. All the news and notes you need from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. They have a great message board. Check out their podcast, the the champ, Jeff Beck, and his announcer. And of course, while you're perusing the site, you look to the right, you see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go to our full archive, courtesy of our good friends at Podbean. That is WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Also, don't forget the history of WWE.com, our friend Grant Coffon. Outstanding research site, ring results, DVD reviews, everything you need is there. Also, check out our show on Stitcher.com, whether you have iPhone, Android, any kind of phone or any kind of player, tablet. Go to it. You can listen to our shows anytime. And then, of course, also on iTunes. And, of course, check out our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com. We're always talking wrestling, sports, anything you want. Check out JR's and my reviews. We talk Raw, SmackDown, all sorts of stuff. And don't forget to help out our friend Jay Womet. Still dealing with a lot of physical issues with his leg and a touch of skin cancer, but he's a fighter, and he's a great fan of the show. And if you want to help him, check the link on our board, Bigelow34.proboards.com, and you can help him out. Great guy.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer, a.k.a. Harvey Whippleman, a.k.a. Downtown Bruno. I'm on The Place to Be. You're listening to The Place to Be podcast. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you didn't know about our business, our industry, the WWE, our sport, this is The Place to Be. The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama says, it be that way sometimes.
All right, Nation, we are back from break. Hope you enjoyed our review of the August 4th, 1997 episode of WCW Nitro. And Scotty C, you hear that music, so you know what time it is, right?
It is time to take the field.
Take the field.
Yeah. All right, JR, after 2 weeks of the NFL season, the prediction totals are I have 21 victories, you have 17 victories through the first 2 weeks. And in our special Place to Be Extra Point competition, well, we both you were like, oh crap, you're taking my picks. Well, you probably should have taken other ones. We both took the Patriots in a lock. That didn't work. We both took the Chiefs in the upset. That didn't work. And we both got our suicides, though. I took the Texans and you took the Bengals.
Mm-hmm. I blame Forchetti getting in my head about the stupid Chiefs.
Yeah, I know. You got a little hairy there at the end. Cleveland gave the Bengals a tough game late, so
yes, they did.
So the numbers right now, remember we subtract. So I have 2 points, and you are at zero for the first 2 weeks. Okay. Week three. You ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
What have you thought about these first 2 weeks, though? So, like
weird.
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, I mean, that always happens, though. I think we forget it. And every year we overreact to week one, and we proclaim teams as champions and other teams as dead in the water. And you know, week two, things turn, and everyone's 1-1, and we're like, okay.
Yeah. All right. Are we ready? We begin our week three jaunt at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, Thursday night as on the NFL Network as the Carolina Panthers host the banged up but 1-1 New York football Giants, your defending Super Bowl champions. Giants looked a little shaky. It was a tale of two halves on Sunday. Well, a tale of two halves on Sunday. First half, they looked horrendous. Eli threw three picks in the second quarter. Second half, he threw for more yards than I think either of our guys threw for the whole game. Finished with a 510 yards, which is second all-time in New York Giants history. And they came from behind for a 41-34 win over the Bucks. Of course, we have that whole victory formation thing at the end.
Who gives a fuck? Has anyone had a weirder career than Eli Manning? This guy's going to the Hall of Fame. Two rings. Every year, though, it's like you just don't... I've never seen someone change so much game to game, week to week, quarter to quarter, minute to minute. It's like, you know, 1 week he looks like, you know, terrible. He looks like fucking Jamarcus Russell. And then, you know, the next week he looks like Bart Starr. You know, it's insane. It's like he just goes minute to minute. He looks so terrible. And then he looks unbelievable. I mean, you know, he got 100, not even 100 yards in the first quarter, and he ends with 550. It's just like, what the hell? You know, it's out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, you know, his receivers play a big part of that, having guys that can... you know, run run after the catch like they do, like with Cruz and Nix, and just two monster receivers. So that helps. But I don't know. There's nothing left to even say about the guy. I mean, like I said, definite Hall of Famer. Just a weird, weird career.
Yeah, very weird career. I'm up in the air on this one, believe it or not. Carolina looked very good on Thursday, last Sunday, in a win over the now 0-2 Saints.
I'll let
you go first.
Yeah, I don't see the Giants losing this one. The Carolinas doesn't have a great defense. The Saints are kind of a mess right now. You know, Newton had a pretty good game, once again, as always. But I think the Giants, even with Nick's out, I think they find it. I think they kind of righted the ship with that. You know, if they lost to Tampa, they might have been some cracks. We'd be getting the first Coughlin on the hot seat rumors,
yes.
Again, as always. But I think they righted the ship a little bit, and I think they go into Carolina with some confidence. They are banged up, though. No Nick's and no Bradshaw. So, you know, the offense is going to take a little bit of a hit. But I don't know. This is a big boy game for Carolina. Last year, man, we always had big boy games we used to talk about. This is a big boy game for Carolina. They want to prove that maybe they get a shot in the South with New Orleans taking a step back. Maybe them and Tampa could take a step forward. This is a game they should win at home if they want to prove that they can hang. But I'm going to go with the Giants.
Yes, I agree with you. I'm going to take the Giants as well. But this is going to be I have a feeling they're going to struggle more than people think they are.
I don't think it'll be a blowout.
No. I think the offense will right themselves, though. Defense needs to right themselves because they don't look that great either. You know, Tampa's is not the greatest team on earth, and 34 points allowed is a lot to go up to Tampa. So, but I think the Giants.
Well, they had Eli threw three picks that set up Tampa pretty well. So, I mean, I don't know if Eli does that against Carolina's D. Tampa's got a slightly better defense. So,
yeah. All right. So we both like the Giants in that one. All right. That's your Thursday night game. Let's head to Sunday. All right, let's go to the 1 o'clock games. There are, geez, how many? 4, 8, 9 1 o'clocks, 4 4 o'clocks, and then, of course, the late game on Sunday on NBC, and then, of course, the Monday night game. We begin at Soldier Field in Chicago, where the Bears coming off I tell you, JR, it was downright ugly last night at Lambeau Field. 4 picks, 7 sacks, Cutler's picking fights with linemen. I mean, it was not pretty.
No.
Not pretty for your betrothed Bears.
Yes.
They host the St. Louis Rams.
The frisky Rams.
Nice comeback win this past week.
I'll tell you, Scott, the Rams should be 2-0.
Yeah, they should be. Yeah, they blew that game against the Lions.
Yeah, they should have won that game. And, you know, they beat a Washington team that had a lot of momentum coming in. So it was an impressive game and did it without Steven Jackson, who hit the doghouse early. Robinson stepped in for him. He looked pretty good. He was running all over the place. So. I think Chicago bounces back at home here. That would be a tough win for a very tough win for St. Louis to go in there and knock off Chicago at Soldier Field. So I think we see the good Jay Cutler, and I think things work out for them this week, and they go ahead and defeat the Rams.
I agree. I like the Bears here too, but like I said, Jay Cutler continues to prove me right that he's the biggest schmuck in all of the NFL. I absolutely can't stand the guy, and now I know why. But they'll win this game anyway, so I like them as well to beat the Rams. Next, we go to Cleveland Brown Stadium in Cleveland, where the Browns host Buffalo. And this is my, JR, upset pick of the week.
Hmm.
I like the Browns at home. Wheaton played very well last week. Trent Richardson made a couple nice plays. I tell you something, they're looking very, very sharp. They are 0-2, but they've lost two very close games. Let's admit it. They should have beat the Eagles, and they made a nice comeback late, but couldn't beat Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I want to jump on Cleveland's bandwagon, but that's my upset pick. I like them at home to beat Buffalo.
I think that's going to be their year, though. They're going to play close and come up short. I think Buffalo got their shit together. CJ Spiller's been a freaking monster. I think he's going to run wild in Cleveland. I'll take Buffalo here to keep a win and go to 2-1.
Okay. All right, so we split on that one. Next, we go to the big... Taj Mahal. That is, of course, Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, the home opener for the Cowboys as they host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A tale of two teams. The Cowboys that played a gutsy, gritty, inspired victory over the Giants at the Meadowlands, and then lay an absolute fart stinker on Sunday up in Seattle. Not Tony Romo.
No, he was fine.
Everybody
his offensive
else.
Line was terrible, and
everybody
his receivers had a lot of drops.
Yeah, and the special teams. Yeah. Look, I've been watching the Cowboys my whole life. Anytime that they have a bad special teams play, they're fucked. And I was watching you guys on CBS because the Fox did not have the doubleheader. Dr. G and I went to the Yankee game. And we got home and we popped on the Jet game. and they show the highlight and they show the block punt, and I said, "Nah, that game's over."
Yeah.
It was only 10. It was only 10-0 at the time. Now they're fucked. Anytime they make a mental gaffe on special teams, it gets contagious throughout the whole team. And sure enough, it was.
And that was a game. Our friend Mike was over watching. We had Red Zone on one TV, and down here in the man cave now, I got two working TVs. So we have the Jets on one, Red Zone on the other. And that's a game we were kind of waiting for Romo and the Cowboys to do something. And like you kept expecting it to come, and it just never came. Much like Sugar to the Roo. But I don't know, Scott. You know, this is a weird team. It's always been a weird team.
I know it is. I know it is.
But, I mean, we talked about that being a tough spot for them to go into Seattle. I mean, Kyle warned us of it as well, and you did too. I mean, that's not an easy place to go play. You knew Seattle was looking to bounce back after that terrible loss down in Arizona. So, it wasn't a surprise to me. I would have liked to see Dallas stepped it up and played a little bit better. But I'm going to take Dallas here. I think Tampa, that was a crushing loss for them. You know, if they pick up the win, are they 1-1 or are they 0-2, Tampa?
The Bucs are 1-1.
Right. They beat Carolina, right?
Carolina.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, they should have been looking at 2-0. That's a tough loss to be up big on the road like that and not be able to seal the deal. To me, that's not an easy one to bounce back from. I can't see them rolling into Dallas and doing the same. I think Dallas has a good week and they bounce back and move to 2-1.
Yeah. I think the Cowboys win as well. You're going to see one of two Cowboy teams. If this is where Jason Garrett's got to nut up and be a real head coach. Because if this was the Doughboy still coaching, they go out and they're going to play another four-quarter stinker and lose to the Bucks. But if Jason Garrett wants to you know, stick his nuts out and say, "I belong as the head coach of this football team, I will bring this team to the promised land," you got to go in here and you got to punch Greg Schiano in the mouth. If you pull any of that victory crap on me, I'm going to knock your quarterback in the ass. That's how the Cowboys have to go out on Sunday and not come out all, "Oh, crap, the offensive line sucks, what are we going to do?" Like the way the Wade Phillips team did. So I'm praying that the Cowboy team comes out and plays like that on Sunday.
Well, Scott, in honor of National Talk Like a Pirate Day, I'm going to take Dallas Cowboys to beat the Buccaneers of Tampa Bay.
Thank you. Should have a goal.
Scurvy bitch.
Should have a Mike and what a Golic had on Mike and Mike this morning in the Johnny Depp hat and the fake teeth. That was pretty fun.
No, they're idiots.
All right. Speaking of funny guys and funny places and guys.
Weren't talking about that, were you?
No. We go to Sun Life Stadium in the Meadowlands for...
In the Meadowlands.
Oh, no.
You said Sun Life Stadium in the Meadowlands.
I meant that's MetLife Stadium. Sorry.
Yes.
Met, Sun, same thing.
Sun Life Stadium in Miami.
Sun Life Stadium in Miami, not at the Meadowlands.
Gloria Estefan will be out.
It's empty this weekend. A rare empty weekend for the Meadowlands. MetLife Stadium, no teams there this weekend.
Yeah, Gloria Estefan will be out. Who's the other guy that owns it? Mark Anthony. They'll all be out jigging and gyrating.
Who's the other guy? Who's the one that used to sing?
Jimmy Buffett.
Sang in the early 90s. Yes, Jimmy Buffett. The other one. I don't remember his name. Anyway. All right, so
Enrique Iglesias.
Guess who returns to his old haunts? Who?
Enrique Iglesias.
Not Enrique Iglesias. The other one.
Ricky Martin.
Shaking
his bonbon in my motherfucking face.
In his fucking face, no. Anyway, forget it. All right, so guess who's returning, though, to his old haunts? And that is the man with the shades. My man, Tony Sperano, returns to Miami as the Jets, Jets, play the Dolphins. I didn't watch the second half of your game closely, but
you didn't miss much.
Give us a few seconds what happened. You guys had a 10-6 lead. I thought you didn't play too bad the first half.
No, they played well in the first half. The first drive, they looked tremendous. Sanchez marched them down the field, and... Sanchez got rattled. He got rocked on one hit. It was an illegal hit. They called a flag. And after that, he was never really the same, honestly. The receivers came up lame in this game. Stephen Hill had a big drop. Santonio Holmes had a bunch of drops. And they just could not get the offense going again after that. I thought Sanchez actually played okay. He got hit a bunch of times. He got rushed a ton of times. And hurried. And he just, you know, the Steelers needed that win. That was not going to be an easy one. The Jets weren't going to march in there and smack them around. So,
yeah.
You know, that's why I talked about the Buffalo game being such a big one for the Jets, because I knew this was going to be a tough game to go into Pittsburgh and win. I would have liked them to see it put up more of a fight, but like I said, the offense just kind of fell apart. Then they seemed to get some life going. They brought Tebow in. He had a couple big rushes, and then they handed off to Sean Green, who just looks like he's running in cement, and he lost 6 yards. They took Tebow out, and then that was it.
Didn't Sean Green get kneed in the head or something, and he had to leave the game?
He came back. But even before then, he just looked slow. I don't know. I like I said early in the year, I think Bilal Powell was going to be the guy there before long. He's looked much fresher and much better. But, you know, a disappointing loss. Early on, Sanchez missed Holmes in the end zone. He overthrew him, and they would have made it 14 6 instead of 10-6. Actually, it would have made it 14-3, I think, instead of 10-3 and then 10-6. So, you know, that would have been a a big momentum swing if they go up with two touchdowns on the first couple drives. So they couldn't keep the momentum going. I think the game in Miami will be a little bit different. Reggie Bush has looked awesome, so they're going to have to contain him. Puha will be there. Revis is still questionable, but, you know, Miami doesn't have the receivers that Pittsburgh does, so I'm not as worried if Revis is out. And honestly, you know, the cornerbacks didn't play that bad. I can't use Revis as an excuse for that game. I don't think it killed them that much, honestly. I don't think it really hurt as bad as people expected it to. I mean, Cromartie was awful on that one play. Mike Wallace came back and got the touchdown catch, and he was camping out in the fucking back of the end zone. But I think the Jets, they need to win this game. They should win this game. I think they're a better team than Miami. Miami, you know, they got a good win over a dysfunctional Oakland team last week, but I don't see the Jets laying down like Oakland did and letting Miami run all over them. So I'll take the Jets here to go 2-1 with two really tough games coming up next.
Okay. I like the Jets, too. Miami didn't look bad. I tell you, we'll talk about the Raiders later on, but Miami, I mean, Reggie Bush had a huge game on Sunday against the Raiders. I don't think he'll rush like that against you guys. I think he'll have a good game. Tannehill's not terrible. I think you guys will have a nice rebound win. I will be surprised. I don't want to say this, but I can't see this as a Jet stinker because sometimes they sometimes lie a little flat against these teams.
Well, Miami plays them tough every year. I mean, they play each other tough, these two teams. So no matter who's the better team, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, Miami was more dominant. The Jets always played them hard, and it's been reversed roles. But Miami's, you know, played well as well, you know, against the Jets as well during this time. So, I just if they lose this game, then forget it.
I agree. You can't lose this game. No, I agree. The Jets are going to win this game, but the Miami will not go away quietly. So, all right. Next, we go to Mall of America Field up in Minneapolis, where the Vikings will host, right now, top to bottom, the best team in the NFL right now through the first 2 weeks. I don't think there's any dispute about that, and that's the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, yeah.
They've looked very, very strong. Opening win at Lambeau, and then at home on Sunday night, they knocked out the still-struggling Detroit Lions. I'm going to make this my lock. I think the Niners go into. I think I'm not going to make this my suicide. I want to save that. I'll save them for when I need them. But I think the Niners go into Minnesota and they beat up the Vikings. I think Peterson will have a good game, but I think Ponder's going to struggle. I think he's going to get rushed like crazy. I like the Niners big in this game.
Yeah, me too. I think the Niners win this. I mean, normally you may look at this as a trap game, as a team that has dominated two very good teams, you know, going on the road. But two things. Minnesota's just not very good, and Jim Harbaugh won't allow that to happen with that team. That team did not have many letdown games last year, so I'll take the Niners here. I'm going to make them my lock as well. I just don't see them going into Minnesota and laying down for the Vikings. And, you know, maybe if the Vikings pulled off that win against Indy last week and they were sitting 2-0 with some confidence, but for them to blow that game against the Colts, and they barely won against Jacksonville, I don't see any way possible how they can beat the Niners. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't see it either. So pretty easy. I mean,
Peterson would have to turn the clock back a couple of years and just, you know, run like the vintage Peterson. That's not coming off ACL surgery to have any chance. And Ponder's not going to throw all over the Niners, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. So there you go. Both of us like the Niners big there. Next, we go to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans, where the Saints have actually been running like a Ford Pinto instead of a Mercedes. 0-2, hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. JR, they absolutely unequivocally have to win this game.
Yeah, must win. They cannot go to 0-3. They cannot lose. The Chiefs have looked pathetic. They've gotten run off the field two straight weeks. Kyle Forchetti's hanging his head in shame at his wild card pick of the Chiefs. I just don't see it. I just don't think Matt Castle's a playoff quarterback. And, if the Saints can't win this game, then they might as well just close up shop for the year.
Yeah, the Chiefs, I don't know, the Chiefs could be going from Kyle Forchetti's playoff pick to the front runner in the Matt Barkley sweepstakes come April. If that's the case. But, I mean, this is must win. I don't care who the head coach is. This is time for Drew Brees' moment to get up off the deck and be the captain of this team and push these guys ahead. So,
and, I mean, and their other two games were tough. I mean, if New Orleans is going to be a mortal team instead of an immortal team, I mean, those were tough games. Washington is better than we all expected them to be. We didn't think Griffin would be this good off the bat. And at Carolina is not a walk. You know what I mean? Carolina's played New Orleans kind of tough. So, you know, those aren't walk games. This to me is at home against a weak Kansas City, banged up Kansas City team. You know, with that pussy Jamal Charles sitting out with his sore knee or whatever else going on. New Orleans needs to win this game. They do. A lot of need to wins this week.
Yeah, a lot of week three must wins. When you need a must win in week three, you and that includes both our teams. Well, maybe not.
I'm a little scared though, Scott. So these weeks where we all, I feel like I'm going chalk down the board. But I don't know. I don't like, you know, it's going to be those weeks where there's 18 upsets and we're like, wow, we didn't pick any of them. But
yeah, well, I mean, well, then if there's a lot of upsets and a lot of team seasons are screwed because these are must wins and the Saints are one of them. So I think they're definitely, but we both think they're going to go into at home and take out the Chiefs. Next, we go to FedEx Field in our nation's capital, where the Washington Redskins, with their home opener, they host the Cincinnati Bengals. It's actually a very tough game.
Yeah.
Tough one to pick. But I think, you know, I love to beat the drum of Andy Dalton. You know what? I'm going to give Robert Griffin his home opener. Andrew Luck got his. Robert Griffin gets his. I think this will be a fun game. I think both offenses will look good, but in the end, I think Washington outlasts them. So I'm going to take the Redskins at home.
All right, I'm not a Bengals fan, really at all. I don't know, something about them. They just don't click. But I'm actually going to take them here. They looked. I know they had a shaky game against Cleveland, but they looked strong enough, and they hung with Baltimore. You know, early in that game before Baltimore, you know, Baltimore is impossible to beat at home. So I think Washington really showed a lot of vulnerabilities in that loss against St. Louis. I mean, that's a game up 21-6, and, you know, they can't salt that game away. They lost Arakpo. They lost Carricker. Two big losses on the defense. Ben Jarvis-Greenellis has actually looked pretty good running the ball. So I think Cincy goes in there, wins a low-scoring, close game, and for the first time, I think Griffin looks a little mortal.
Okay. I would agree with you if it was any other team that had a really potent offense. I just don't know if Cincinnati has that much weaponry.
Well, I don't think they need to. That's my point. I think they're going to win a close game. I think the defense is going to hold up. I think Griffin struggles a little bit for the first time, coming off that tough loss in St. Louis. So it depends, you know, if Garcon's out again as well. So I see it being a surprising, like, you know, 16-10 game, and everyone's like, whoa, what happened? Why didn't Griffin score, you know, like he did previous weeks?
All right. I think it's going to take a few weeks before we see the Arakpo character holes to really show up, but we'll see what happens. It'll be a good game.
Part of this is that I just feel like I need to pick some underdogs.
Yes. All right, next, LP Field in Memphis, where the Tennessee Titans host another must-win team.
Oh, God,
even though they are 1-1. That's the Detroit Lions. Do you realize that at this point, if Chris Johnson continues his yards per carry, he will reach 100 yards by week 13?
he's been terrible. He looks cooked.
Yards a carry.
He looks cooked. I mean, there are some guys that, you know, coming off injuries or whatever, taking time to rehab. But Chris Johnson just looks done. You know, I just don't see it. I think they're in trouble. I think Tennessee is going to be, you know, there were some other teams we thought may be the worst team, but I think Tennessee is may end up being that team where they're towards the bottom. I thought they were going to be a little bit better than this, but Locker struggled. Their offense has struggled. They went into San Diego and just got stomped on. And New England, even with a weaker game, still beat them pretty well. So I like Detroit here. I think Stafford, finally, the real Matt Stafford stands up, I think, and has his first dominant week of the year. So,
yeah, I think so, too. I like Detroit on the road. Again, must win. It is a road game. But, again, Tennessee is bringing nothing to the table. And a guy who rushed for almost 2,000 yards 2 years ago just already looks broken down. It's not good. So we both like the Lions in that one. Final 1 o'clock game of the day. We go to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where Andrew Luck and the Colts host the Jacksonville Jaguars. Luck looked really good last week in a win over Minnesota. Jacksonville is about at the same footing talent-wise. We saw them play each other in week 1, so I'm actually going to take the Colts at home. I think Luck will – I think that the Jags' offense will be a little bit better than Minnesota's. Gabbard, I think, won't have a bad game. Drew still running the ball well. But I like Luck. I like the fact he's spreading the ball, feels confident in that quarterback role already. The Colt defense has not been that bad, so I'm going to take the Colts at home. But this will be another close game. I think a good fourth quarter by Luck. He'll throw a couple of clutch third down passes, and the Colts win at home.
This one worries me in the everyone's like, all right, Luck figured it out last week. Jacksonville sucks. Indy's going to beat him at home, and then Jacksonville womps him. So I'm going to take Indy, but I'm just saying it now as kind of a warning. I wouldn't be shocked that Jacksonville just goes in there and blows up somehow, and Indy falls apart. But I think Indy at home, that was a great win for them, beating Minnesota, getting Luck's first win. So I think they ride the momentum. I think Jacksonville's pretty bad, too. The AFC South is just atrocious overall, but I think Indy could end up surprising some people and winning maybe 4 or 5 games, maybe more than people thought. So I'll take Indy here as well, but you know, I'm putting the warning out there right now that I wouldn't be shocked if Jacksonville pulls that one out somehow.
Okay, we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised either, but Luck's really, he's really already looked like he's matured. I mean, he's going to have his bad games. He's going to play really good teams down the stretch, and I mean, just remember, he's got 2 games with the Texans that he's got to deal with as well. So, all right, let's get to the 4 o'clock games. We'll start at the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, where the 2-0 Arizona Cardinals will host the 2-0, but really played like 0-2, Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not making this an upset. Well, I already have my upset pick, but I'm taking the Cardinals at home. They're playing with a lot of confidence right now, a lot of confidence. And now the Eagles lost one of their key offensive linemen. Vic has looked just absolutely abysmal.
Yeah, he's been terrible
the first 2 weeks, and they've squeezed out 1-point wins over the Browns. And I can't believe the Ravens lost Sunday, I can be honest with you. I really like the way – I mean, this does look like a game that Vic snaps out of it and throws for 300 yards and rushes for 100 or something. I don't see it happening. I'm gonna ride the wave until it hits me in the face. I'm gonna take the Cardinals at home. Wisenhunt really has these guys playing really inspired ball. They're not letting the quarterback thing get to them. Cobb is playing fine.
He's not playing fine. He's
not
okay.
Fine, but he's playing well enough to win games.
Yeah.
And they squeaked out a win over the Patriots. I mean, obviously, was that more of the Patriots losing than the
Cardinals? No, I don't – well, I don't think
not
so.
Totally, but
no, Arizona's D played really well in that game. They really did, and their offense didn't do a ton. I mean, you know, the turnovers really helped, but their defense is underrated. You know, I thought they were going to be the worst team in the league, but they're far from it with that defense and special teams. You know, Patrick Peterson is you know, a threat on defense and returning punts. So I'm taking Arizona. This is my upset special. I think Philly's due for a loss. That they're riding a pretty lucky streak, and I think that lucky streak ends down in Arizona. And I think Arizona wins a tight one, but I don't know how much Cobb does. I mean, you know, I was so pissed when Ryan Williams fumbled that ball and the Pats looked like they were going to seal that with a field goal, not because I hate the Patriots, but because I felt like they really didn't deserve that win, and that would have been such a tough loss for Arizona. As it was such a statement win for them to go in there and beat New England at home.
I agree.
So Gostkowski missing that football was to me a matter of ball don't lie. They didn't deserve to win that game like that Ryan Williams fumble. So I mean, Arizona really dominated that game. They deserve the win.
Yeah, I think the defense has been great. And Vic, let's just be honest, he just looks bad. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is, but he's throwing the ball like a dead duck, and now with one of his linemen out, I think the Eagle offense is going to continue to struggle. They're the most phony 2-0 team in the league right now. I like Arizona.
Yeah, it's my NFC East pick, buddy. Back off.
yeah, it should be 0-2.
2-0.
In any event, we both like the Cardinals to win.
Yeah.
Next, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. And I tell you, JR, this might be the game of the week.
Yeah.
Great matchup here. The Atlanta Falcons looked awesome on Monday night in the win over the Broncos, taking on the San Diego Chargers, who have looked a lot better than I thought they would.
Yeah, 2-0.
2-0, looking really good.
They really just pounded Tennessee Sunday.
Yeah, they really did. I just think top to bottom, they're very equal. Neither have that much of a running game. Michael Turner's in the pokey now. First of all, we've
he's
said
terrible
this
anyway.
A lot. Can anybody buy some goddamn car service? You're all friggin' millionaires. Yeah. Get a cab.
It's ridiculous. I mean, he just looks slow, Turner. I think this may be a good chance for Jacquizz Rodgers to kind of steal that job away a little bit.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I'm gonna give the nod to the Chargers. I mean, it's very tough for the Falcons to go in and win a big road game. I mean, they went to Kansas City, but I think the Chargers defend their turf at home. This is an opening for them in that division. And, you and I both ignore if should be working at Big Y or Costco or something. But I'll tell you something. It's a chance for them to start 3-0. I think they take it. I like the Chargers at home.
I like Atlanta. I think they're just a better team. I think San Diego's played a couple easier games. Although Atlanta's week one, but still going into Kansas City is a little bit tough. But to crap on Peyton Manning like that on Monday night, picking him off three times in the first half and everything else. And Matt Ryan's just very good, and their receivers are tough. So, even though Ryan Matthews is back, I think this will be a very good game. I think it'll be a close game, but I think Atlanta pulls it out and goes 3-0.
Okay. Next, we go to Sports Authority Field at Mile High. Speaking of the aforementioned Peyton Manning, his 1-1 Broncos host the 2-0 Houston Texans. It's amazing the 180 between the two appearances. Peyton looked really good last Sunday night against the Steelers and looked hideous in that first half against. Could you imagine both Mannings, Eli and Peyton, both threw three picks in a quarter in the same week? Unprecedented.
Yeah.
I like the Texans. They're just better.
Yes.
I think they're gonna fluster Peyton. I think their defense will slow down their offense, and I don't think based on Slayton. And Schaub has a very quick release. I don't think the Bronco defense is going to be able to get to
Slayton.
Schaub. Not Slayton. Foster.
back in 2005.
I know. Wrong Texan running back. Yeah. I'm sorry. Slate did it again. Arian Foster. And Matt Schaub gets rid of the ball quicker than Ben Roethlisberger does.
Yeah.
I like the Texans on the road.
No, me too. I do. I agree they're a better team. I think Manning came back to earth a little bit. I think it's going to take him a few more weeks to get things going. So I think they take a tough loss here at home to Houston.
Next, we go to Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. man, we're kicking old school. Is it Kenny Stabler against Terry Bradshaw here? One of the AFC wars of the 70s,
yep.
The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Oakland Raiders.
Raiders have been a shit show. They were your pick to win the West, right?
Yeah, what happened?
Terrible.
God, they're awful.
Terrible.
And, you know, it's the defense.
Yeah.
The defense can't stop anybody.
I mean they got ran off by Miami.
Carson Palmer hasn't played that bad.
Yeah.
He threw for over 300 yards against the Dolphins, but their defense sucks.
Yeah.
Ugh. Pittsburgh, again, look good. They look pretty good against you guys. I wouldn't say they look great in beating you guys this week. I think they looked okay.
The story of that game was the Jets couldn't tackle. That was the end of the story. I mean, they could not. They got to Roethlisberger four or five times. They couldn't tackle him. That was the end of the story right there.
I'm going to take the Raiders at home. They've got to win eventually. Must win. I'm taking the Raiders at home.
I don't think they're. It may be a must win, but I don't think they're a team that could say it's a must win. We need to win. They can assert themselves and win. I don't think they beat Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh's heating up a little bit. You know, they barely lost to Denver. That was a tight game. And then, you know, they made a statement against the Jets at home. I think they go out to Oakland, and I think Roethlisberger throws all over that defense, and their defense holds Palmer down. So I like Pitt there.
Okay. All right. The Sunday night game on NBC, we go to M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, where the Ravens, coming off that tough one-point loss in Philly, taking on a really beat-up, both on the field and in the newspapers, New England Patriots.
Yes.
Obviously, the loss to Arizona. Brady did not look very good.
No.
And Gostkowski doesn't just miss that kick, man. He butchered.
Yeah,
I think I could have kicked a better field goal than he could have. That kick was horrendous.
Well, the big news around here is the Welker stuff, that they didn't use him. He's getting less plays, less snaps than Julian Edelman. People think it's because they're trying to make a statement that, you know, he's basically got it here at the end of the year anyway. They didn't pay him. They want to see if Edelman can take his role. You know, they don't like the way he was running his mouth in the paper. There's so many rumors going around. Others, you know, more rational people are saying they think it has to do with the fact that that they want to establish a run game. They've been trying to use Ridley more, and that Edelman's a better blocker than Welker, and that's why he's in there more. So who knows? But it has led to a little bit more turmoil in New England than they're used to. I like Baltimore here. I think these two teams are fairly even, and I just, you know, I never pick against Baltimore at home. I just don't. They're tough at home, especially at night. That crowd gets so fired up, they're going to have those black jerseys on. Ray Lewis will be out there screaming, get everyone fired up. They are scary to play at home. And I think we're going to see a rare back-to-back loss in the Bill Belichick era, something that does not happen that soon. And this would be the first time since week one of 2003 that the Patriots would be under 500 under Bill Belichick.
Did you realize last week was the first time since Gillette Stadium opened that they lost their home opener?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they've had a hell of a run, so yeah.
Yeah.
I like Baltimore here, though. I think they hand them two consecutive losses, a rarity.
Yeah, I take the Ravens as well. And then Monday night, CenturyLink Field
I'm so torn
in Seattle.
This game.
CenturyLink Field in Seattle, the Seahawks hosting the Green Bay Packers. Packers looked awful in week one, looked good, not great. Yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers really didn't look that good.
No, they didn't play that well.
The Packer defense that won that game. Rodgers looked okay. He didn't look great. Seattle, of course, tough loss to the Cardinals, and they beat up my Cowboys. Cowboys are better than the Packers are better than the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I'll admit it. Green Bay's going to win this game. They just have more talent. Mike McCarthy's a good coach. Aaron Rodgers, he's one of those captain kind of rah-rah guys. I think they go in there, play like the Packers. We know they can play as, and beat up the Seahawks.
Oh, I'm so. I've been debating this game all day.
Really?
Part of me can see Green Bay going in there and smacking them around. If it was in Green Bay, I'd say for sure they kill them. Seattle's got some mojo working. I think they're feeling great after that win over Dallas. They pretty much dominated the Cowboys. Their defense looked great, as good as we thought it was going to look like. You know, Russell Wilson played good enough to win, and Marshawn Lynch ran well. Green Bay's defense has not played well. I mean, they had those picks against Cutler, but a lot of those Cutler handed to them. I'm taking Seattle in an upset, Scott. That's not my upset special, but I'm taking them at home. I think it's going to be a feel-good story on Monday night. I think they win. I think the replacement refs get influenced by that Seattle crowd a little bit. I think maybe we see a bad call or two. Well, I mean, that's a guaranteed bad call or two, but I think they go Seattle's way.
I know, no kidding.
I'm taking Seattle to win by 1 point on a last-minute field goal.
Okay. All right. So there you go. There are your picks. All right, JR, we got to do, just to recap, in our P2B extra point competition. Our locks, we both have the 49ers this week in locks. And I have Cleveland as my upset. You have Arizona as your upset. All right, we need to do our week 3 suicides.
Hmm. All right, I have two in mind, but I'm waiting to see who you take first.
Okay. Let me take a look for a minute. Let's see. I'm going to go with my suicide will be Detroit.
Oh, God. You always steal my thunder. All right, I'm taking Detroit, too. I was considering Indy. I really was. But the fact that you took Detroit, I'm going to as well. I only like to take like a shaky one if you take a shaky one. You know what I mean? If you take a solid one, I got to match you. So I'm going to use Detroit as well. I think they beat Tennessee. And I don't know going forward if I'm going to have too much faith in them. So I'll take Detroit here.
Okay. So just to recap, we both have the Lions as our suicide pick. In our upset picks, I have the Browns over Buffalo. You have the Cardinals over Philadelphia. And we both, in our locks, have the 49ers to absolutely punch the Vikings in the face. So, all right, there is your week 3 picks.
Yes, in the books.
Great game. Another fun Sunday.
Yeah.
Fun Sunday.
I'm going to be at a birthday party for my goddaughter, but the Jets are actually on locally here. So I already talked to my friend, and I told him as godfather, I get to dictate that the Jets-Miami game will be on his TV during this party. So
yes,
since the
I will
Pats
be,
are
of
night.
Course, I will be heading out early from Chateau
Oh, yeah,
Ross.
I forgot you're visiting. We usually mention that on the show. Scott will be arriving hopefully late Friday night.
Yes.
We have a nice evening plan Saturday, a little guys' night. Myself, you, Mr. Baldy there, Rotella.
Yeah, Mr. Richard.
Yeah, Mr. Richard, Mr. Flanagan, Mr. Jim.
Yep.
Is that it? Is that everyone?
Yes. Well, I was going to meet, I was going to miss referee.
Yes, referee Rich was supposed to be
here. I had a great storyline involved with that, JR. If he was going to show up, I was going to come with the sling. And have like sit on the couch all like out of it and drugged and saying like the adverse reactions and be all like out of it.
Don't forget. I mean, he had the standing offer that you could punch him in the face. So I mean, that was on the table for that night. I was looking forward to it.
I might ask for just for a case of Gansett, and I think we'll be all right. But I don't want to punch him in the face. If he drunk hits me again, then there's no excuse. He's toast. But he's also in the military. He could probably break every bone in my body.
Yes. You're lucky he didn't kill
so
you
he's,
further.
He's baiting me into wanting to throw a punch at him so he can snap my wrist or something. But anyway, it's going to be looking forward. It is always a pleasure when I look forward to seeing you hang out a weekend. Unfortunately, I will not be staying long on Sunday. I've got a church function or a night's function on Sunday, so I have to bolt early. But it's a fun Sunday of football. So
it'll be a good time. Saturday night, we'll play a little beer dive. We're gonna watch some TV and watch some sports and other stuff.
Time,
so.
Of course. On a side note, JR, on one of the two TVs on Saturday night will be the Irish and the Wolverines.
We'll see. I'm still debating if I'm gonna allow you to watch a game.
Oh, come on.
I can't believe you want to. Every time you comment, there's a Notre Dame game on. They usually get killed. So.
I know. Well, primetime game in South. This is the best Notre Dame team since pretty much I've known you. they're 3-0. They're 11th in the country. Playing Michigan. First primetime game under Touchdown Jesus in a while. NBC mm-hmm. usually does 3:30 games. So I'm actually looking forward to that. The Chargers, UNH, will be playing your Greyhounds of Assumption in 2 weeks. I'll be seeing that game.
Also this Saturday night, the big NWF anniversary show.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was 1 year ago. We were there, Scott. 1 year ago.
Yes. And you know what's going to happen? And that show, Johnny Fab and whatever that guy's name is, are going to stare at each other.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
our friend John Walters commented to me. He's going to be on Nightline this week. He told me to DVR the show. So talking about the RJ Brewer character, yeah.
Wow. Very impressive. Who's he fighting on Saturday, Dino?
I don't really care. So.
Okay, I didn't think so. Who cares?
Who cares about the NWF? All right, that wraps things up. Hope you enjoyed our WCW Nitro review and our Week 3 predictions. Another show in the book, Scott. Another week down. I will see you Friday night. PTB Nation, we'll see you next week. We have a big week planned for you. Monday night, we're coming at you with In Your House Ground Zero, the first 3-hour In Your House show. And Wednesday night, Vintage Vault style, 2 vaults in a week.
Yes.
One night only. So we have 2 big shows coming next week. We have Ground Zero Monday, One Night Only Wednesday. The threads will go up this weekend for your feedback, so look out for that.
And that JR, a lot of people have been requesting. This is one everybody in PTB Nation has been really looking forward to, so we're delivering for you. That's part of our little 1997 little capsule.
Yeah, should be fun. We're looking forward to that. I haven't watched that full show in a long time, and I'm really looking forward to that title match, because that's one that's really great, really often forgotten. So there you go, another show in the books. Also want to give a quick shout-out to our buddy Jordan Duncan, him and his family going through a little bit of a tough stretch here, so everyone keep the Duncan family in your prayers, as always. PTB Nation bands together like they always do. So, all right, Scott, I'll see your ass Friday night here at the Chateau. Have your bed ready to go. I'll have your glass of water by the bed. and things will be ready to go for it. All right, PTV Nation, have a great, safe weekend. We will talk to you Monday nights from Ground Zero.
Keep the light on.
And keep your fucking broken collarbone to yourself. You leaking it don't, big cool when he don't stop, and Ninth Wonder he don't stop, even though most of our albums are poorly promoted, and all the magazines probably won't even quote it. J-League never running or falling. We got tight to steal y'all spotlight and y'all won't even know it. One time for Big Pooh cause he quit eating steak, and two times for Ninth Wonder cause he setting it straight, and three times to that hole from the 8-1-4 that moved in, got kicked out and caught on tape. Just a little bit of time is all that we granted on this planet for us to get our little bit of shine. So if y'all wanna get a line, then talk to Big Doe, cause ain't shit free but the spirit of my rhymes. I hear it all the time, LB ain't on the same shit, so innovative, y'all the next best thing since whatever. I just laugh with it, cause today's fan is tomorrow's rap critic. One day they giving you the thumbs up, the next they telling Knife to go and switch his drums up. The best is what they expect, but why they won't let the music just be what it is anybody's guess. So if y'all feeling this, y'all ain't gotta analyze it. This shit is dope and we ain't changing up. Making money and our parents ain't ashamed of us, and when I think about that I can't complain as much. So let it rock, Raleigh gotta rock, to the Durham gotta, Chapel Hill gotta, Green Drug gotta, Hop Thorn gotta, got a zone. It's for y'all, man. Damn, check it out. Rocking it don't, freak freaking it don't, shoot leaking it don't, to the beating it don't. Think I will, but I won't stop. Think I will, but I won't stop. Rocking it don't, freak freaking it don't, to the beating it don't, shoot leaking it don't. Think I will, but I won't stop. They think I will, but I won't stop. Fonte is the show shot. Big Pooh and it don't stop. Ninth Wonder got the beat to show shot. LB is on the beat and it don't stop. Rock to the home, freak, freak to the home. Rock to the home. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. All the people out there.